Hello and welcome to a very special episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 260, which is, why is it so special, Kristen?
Well, we had some of the lovely ladies from Magnipus come over.
Yes.
And do a takeover of your podcast.
That's right. I was not the host of the podcast. I was just sort of a silent, not so silent. I was a fairly quiet moderator and really gave them the mic and control of the podcast, which I thought was a lot of fun. So who are the three people that are featured on this podcast?
Sally Slade, Kat Harris.
Yes.
And I'm not going to say this correctly, but Emily Van Belgium.
Right. Better known as EVB.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And they're all from Magnipus. They're all sort of developers there and do amazing things. And it ended up being a very long podcast because, you know, they were just having a great time and got carried away into talking about stuff. What are some of the cool things that you heard from it? You listened to it almost a couple of times,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I loved it. It was so good. Right. It's really interesting. So, like, my key points, I said, like, were from Billbot Baggins to MIT, NASA. We talk about, or they talk about robots with soothing voices, male versus female, what's better. And some of the main points I got were be a kind human, efficiency is everything, and diversity is good.
Yes.
And my last little comment, as they said, the most dangerous phrase, we've always done it this way.
Yeah.
And all those points are talked about thoroughly in the podcast.
Yeah, it's really cool. I like the Billbot Baggins thing is pretty
That's
fun.
That's amazing, yeah.
Yeah, it's really funny. So yeah, you guys we'll hear about Sally talking about Billbot Baggins. It's fascinating. So really excited to have them on. And I think, you know, we should probably think about doing more takeovers because I think those were a lot of fun.
Yes.
A lot of fun to do that. All right. Let's talk about some events.
All right. So you can find these events at chaosgroup.com/events.
Yep.
The one we keep talking about, and it's going to be amazing, is Total Chaos 2020, which is May 29th to 31st.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go to the website at chaosgroup.com/totalchaos.
Yep.
And you can just keep following us and find out more about all the amazing speakers we keep coming.
Right. Yeah. And speaking of diversity, actually, it's really cool. Like this year, almost 50% of our speakers are going to be women, which is a pretty big deal in the tech and CG world. It's usually not that diverse. So it's really cool to have that representation. And I'm really, really happy about the speaker lineup this year. It's incredible.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Another little event I want to talk about. This is happening. This podcast comes out on Monday. And so the webinar itself is going to be happening on Tuesday. So you have to register today if you're going to see it. But anyway, it is NVIDIA's webinar with Ian Spriggs. And he's going to be talking about all the amazing work that Ian Spriggs does. And it's going to be happening Tuesday, January 21st, from 10 a.m. to 11 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
A.m.,
yes. 11 a.m. to 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you want to find it, just Google Ian Spriggs NVIDIA webinar and it'll pop up. But it should be really good. I'm actually going to be on there for a little bit as well. So definitely recommend doing that if you want to know more about Ian's work and how he's been using GPUs and RTX technology in his latest renders. What else is new?
Well, we have started transcribing some of our podcasts. So if you go to the podcast page, you can just click on transcript and see it fully and get the full download. Some of them are really, really long and they're amazing.
Yeah. So if you guys want to be able to search for like, hey, you know, like we listened to the Tim Miller podcast, for example, and Tim Miller said something specific and sort of scrubbing it, you can actually just download the whole transcript and search it there. So it's pretty, pretty cool to do that. Speaking of which, how can people go to the podcast page?
So one way you can go to chaosgroup.com/CG Garage.
Yep.
Another is facebook.com/CG Garage Podcast.
Right. And then if you want to email us, if you have any other ideas or, you know, ideas for like another takeover, let us know. We'd love to know about it. Just email us at labs@chaosgroup.com. With that, please enjoy this very special and cool podcast with Sally, Kat, and Emily.
Welcome to another CG Garage where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Go global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fernell.
Introduce ourselves, right?
Yeah, let's introduce our esteemed colleagues.
Sure, Chris, sure. Would you like to go first?
No, I'm just suspected. I'm just hosting. The producer here.
I see. Okay. Sally, why don't you lead us, fearless leader?
Oh, thank you. Allow me to introduce... Well, let me set the scene. To my left, Emily Van Bellegum, an engineer, designer, musician, Renaissance woman of all kinds.
Oh, man. Mm.
To my right, Catherine Harris.
Hello.
Engineer, artist, musician. And across from me, Chris Nichols, host of CG Garage and V-Ray Chaos Group community leader, I believe.
Yep.
And to my other right, Bella the dog.
Yes.
May she remain silent and content.
No jingling. Yeah. I will try to keep it silent.
Okay. Now that we've set the scene, would you like to introduce yourself or would you prefer?
Sure.
Narrative overlay.
I can try. So as Sally said, I'm Emily Van Bellegum, otherwise known as EVB. I specialize in user experience design for virtual and augmented reality applications, experiences, as you will. And I moved out to LA after finishing school at MIT, and concentrating in human-computer interaction and a little bit of light field displays.
Dope.
Yeah, a little bit of light field displays, meaning Emily has a master's in holography and a patent.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
Yeah, just drop the
Sally,
patent bomb.
Keep your cool, man.
I can't.
This is the introduction.
I am fascinated with light field, but I'm not going to start asking questions.
Nice.
Yeah, no big deal.
Yeah.
Do you want to keep going counterclockwise?
Oh.
Clockwise? Counterclockwise.
Don't hurt yourself.
Okay. Sure. Yes, hello. It is I, Sally Slade, returning. I have a background in computer science. I spent some N years doing visual effects, technical director, pipeline type role. And here I am now, almost on my fourth year in the XR field as a VR sort of technical designer / prototyper engineer type hero.
Ooh, nice.
I like
emphasis
it.
On hero.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess I will go next.
Yeah. Go for it.
Hello, I am Catherine Harris, also known as Kat Harris. And similarly to... That was the dog. Similarly to Sally, I studied computer science. I worked at Microsoft for 6 years doing technical evangelism with a focus in game development, cloud backend, bot development, and then did research and development for HoloLens 2 and Azure Spatial Anchors as a technical designer. And led a couple teams up there, and then decided I would like a change from Seattle and move to LA to work at Magnopus with Sally and Emily, and it has been wonderful. So that is my journey to LA.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's nice to have you.
You guys work together every day, right?
Every day.
Well, yeah, I guess sometimes. Sally, I don't work with Sally every day anymore.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
For all of us, really.
It's project to project basis.
Yeah, Emily and I are on the same team now. So we like work together every day.
Right.
Yep.
But
the mighty Magnopus has swelled in size.
Yes.
And it is now very easy to go days or sometimes weeks without seeing a friend.
Unless you go out of your way to go bug Sally at least once every 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
Good luck finding me now. I'm in the secure room.
Yeah, I was about to say. Like,
she's
I tried
in, like,
going
the
in
secret
there today
room.
And I got blocked off by the darkness.
I remember the secret room.
Yeah.
I did not like it when I had to be in the secret room either. It's just, you're just siloed.
Well, you too. I was just going to say, we had some interactions the other day with just like talking about tech and stuff and like what our favorite tech was and like why we got into this crazy, crazy, amazing world.
Mm. Yes.
What a great conversation that was.
And when I say earlier, I mean earlier today, but also a couple weeks ago. And then like generally whenever we talk, it's nice to hear what these ladies think of. Like, oh, did you hear this news about like, for instance, didn't you have something about, crap, I can't remember the technology now.
Not light fields?
It wasn't light fields, unfortunately. Okay. Otherwise, it probably...
Edge computing?
Yes.
Edge computing. We're talking about edge computing. Yes. Nice.
Edge computing and 5G.
Yes.
Tell me, okay, so is 5G overhyped?
Oh.
I don't think it is.
I don't think so, because...
But it's so small.
It's true. Now. I think that... The implications for what we'll be able to do in the coming years just only grow more and more if okay. we no longer, you know, have to rely on the hardware of like a full PC. If we can compute offline and then, you know, port over to our headsets, that's...
How do you feel about the phrase democratization of hardware?
Ooh. How do you feel about it, Sal?
A little dirty. But it is freeing us from the need in the future to like buy these, you know, expensive graphics cards and things of this nature, because theoretically we can get them from the Tawa.
Oh. Yeah.
On demand.
Yes.
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 Like we get most of our things nowadays. Everything's on demand. And like, yeah, definitely want that for computing.
There was a really hilarious, there was The Verge, the whole thing about the top 100 technologies of the last decade, right? And they were not like, you know, specific, they were very interesting the way they were. And one of the categories was that Dell shitbox Chromebook.
Brutal.
The point is, it's like it's cost like $150, but you can do almost anything you really need to do on it to a point. And it's like, you know, because it's basically connected to the cloud or whatever, right? So like most of the computing is happening somewhere else. You're just terminaling into the internet somehow.
Yeah. It's, I think, honestly, I mean, it's true at the moment, I think. It could be overhyped, like, at this exact moment.
Right.
But I think the fact that we're even able to consider the opportunities that it could bring, especially for our field, is really exciting for me.
Right.
It's true. The expectation alone is exciting.
We will see what the reality has to bring. Ooh.
The virtual reality?
No. The cross, the mixed reality.
Okay.
All of the realities coming from Microsoft. Got to put in that whole mixed reality thing.
Well, Kat, you did allude to a conversation earlier, and now I would like you to rehash for the audience. How, in fact, did you get into tech?
Ooh. I'll keep it short. But, how did I? It was more of like a thing that was always present. Like, I always loved video games. I always loved my dad built computers. Mm-hmm. So he just had a side gig of like putting PCs together, and there were just always like extra mice and extra motherboards like in our house. And then I wanted to do aerospace engineering, so went into school for that. And you have to learn some computer science in an engineering degree. And I realized that I enjoyed computer science a lot more than all of my mandatory aerospace classes. And realized soon that, like, oh, these video games that I love, they were made by computer scientists and game developers. And you can indeed build games with this coding. And so then I was like, cool, yeah, no, I'm switching majors and doing this thing.
So the aerospace thing didn't really take off?
Wow, no. Get out. Yeah, and then
through... Not like it's rocket science or anything.
Oh, sick jokes, you guys. I'm trying to think of one and I can't. But to continue, it kind of started there, and then I did game development in school as like a side as a side project and as a side group or club, and then hold on, we're dog managing right now.
She's migrating.
Yes, there we go.
There you go.
Yay. And then after that, we did a or through that, I was introduced to a lot of software developers at Microsoft and got a job straight out of school doing technical evangelism, which is a lot of just make cool things using third-party technology and integrating it into the ever-growing Microsoft globe of technology and document it and make it better and tell the engineering teams what to do next and right. help them. And then through that, I did VR and then augmented reality with HoloLens and met Sally and did more stuff with creating better UI systems, and then eventually went into the team that builds the HoloLens for the HoloLens 2.
Nice.
Was that actually in a basement? I heard that was in a basement.
No, we got a whole building. Oh, parts of it were under.
Not just the bottom.
Yeah, no. We got a whole four floors, but also there was a large section of it in the underground section of a very popular building, an open building, which you would never think that it would have anything top secret. And there was a section of the team that did
the
go down
needle?
There. No, still on the campus.
Developmental? <But, laughs>
yeah. No, the team ended up having like four studios. So pretty big team.
Outstanding.
Yes. Nice. Very, very nice.
Did you ever cross paths with a woman who I believe is called Donna Sarkar?
Oh yeah, I love Donna. Yeah. Donna is an amazing human. Donna was the head of, I hope I'm not messing this up, but she was the head of HoloLens for a time and did all of the, helped run all of the hackathons that we did to help introduce software developers to how to develop for a HoloLens. And this woman was at every hackathon around the country and was just like the pinnacle of, this is what a leader should be like if you are managing a hackathon for others. And then also, and that was my main interaction with her, but she also led a bunch of other teams and then led Windows Insiders for a while. And now I believe she has her own fashion company, which she hand customizes pieces for amazing like women in tech and in entrepreneurial positions that want very high quality tech forward apparel.
Amazing.
Yes, she is a hero, as we've already liked to point those out.
at the hackathon where Kat and I met, spoiler alert.
Oh.
I encountered Donna briefly. Mm. I believe I shook her hand. If I had the courage, I don't recall.
Mm-hmm.
She just made such an impression. She's got a real commanding presence and had a very thorough knowledge of the HoloLens.
Yes.
So cool. Yes. And I think it was from her introduction / monologue, whatever speech, in which I learned of the basement.
Yes. Ah, I see. Yes. Then she was definitely talking about the public building with the secret basement that no one really knows about. And then, I thought you were going to say, do you know Julia Schwartz? And I was going to be like, yes, I love that woman. She's amazing as well. She did like, she's a researcher and an engineer and a lead woman in tech who is just on the HoloLens 2 side. And she's like, back in HoloLens 1 days, she open sourced the two-hand manipulation, resize, and turning rotating of objects, like as a component system. So she helped us componentize this awesome system that she made with HoloLens 1. And then HoloLens 2, she did like all the major hand tracking.
Yes.
Because she's amazing.
And then got to show it off publicly as the...
Yes, on stage.
Yeah, keynote.
I think it was for Build.
Something or other.
Yeah, Build in Barcelona, or like some conference where they were announcing HoloLens 2 stuff and showing it off on stage. And I was like, oh my gosh, she deserves everything because she's so cool and so amazing.
When she played that holographic piano with her hands in real time.
My team helped make that.
Chills.
I helped make that piano.
Emily's skin is like, it's not a hologram.
What are you talking about? Tupac was a hologram.
Oh my god.
Chucks.
Oh yeah. The headset. Wait. Walks away.
Yeah. Well, M, how did you get in?
Yeah, I want to know about your hologram.
Yeah. The tech. Speaking of,
what
like,
is a hologram? Let's actually get a proper definition.
Oh yeah. God. Oh god. So let's see.
Yeah, MIT. I want to know about how that. Let's go. Mm-hmm. How did you get into MIT?
It's very Emily cold over there. Yes, where I was born precedes everything. I actually started really loving entertainment, and that's kind of how I think I ended up in LA as a whole. I grew up loving Disney movies and Pixar movies, and that was animated movies was big in my life. Mm-hmm. And then I really love art. I always did classical paintings, oil, watercolor, pastel, anything I could get my hands on. One day, both of my engineer parents, shocker, came up to me and they're like, you know, they need this thing called computer science to do those movies. And I was like, do tell.
That's how they
cornered me. So I took a computer science class in high school and I was like, some pretty dope stuff right here. With MIT, I got there and I was like, hey, I like computer graphics stuff. And they're like, well, have you heard of VR? And I was like, yeah, a little bit. And that's kind of how I ended up in the virtual space like area. Mm-hmm. I worked in a group for my entire undergrad and for my master's degree called Object-Based Media in the MIT Media Lab. And I had some incredible advisors, supervisors, and friends. Shout out to Dan, if he ever listens to this.
What's up, Dan?
Novi-san. they kind of taught me from the very beginning, you know, because I started with the classical computer graphics background, like working up from like, okay, well, what's a ray tracer? How do I write one? And, you know, how do you do cloth sim? Like just by making the springs. And then in this group, OBM, we specialized in, objects that, you know, could help with storytelling coming to life in everyday uses. And the very first project I worked on, I was a freshman. I didn't really know how to code anything. I was basically useless. We had this holographic telepresence chair, and they were like, here you go. Here's the code base. Have fun. And I was like, I'm still learning what a method is.
Did you call that method learning?
Yeah, I was about to say.
Yeah.
Like method acting.
Yeah.
Method computer science.
Yeah. They gave me access to the GitHub, and I was like, I should not have this power. I can destroy all of this.
Wait, what was the first thing you made?
First, I learned about version control.
Ah, yes.
But I was working with, at the time, the Xbox Kinect and tessellating point clouds. And then we would display those on like a Pepper's Ghost setup on a chair.
You mean a hologram?
Oh my god! It's gonna be all night.
I'm joking. Okay.
I mostly was doing a lot of Pepper's Ghost displays. My master's thesis was on Pepper's Ghost display combined with lenticular rendering, which is like the Haunted Mansion from Disneyland.
Yeah.
Combined with 3D scratchy bookmarks.
Right. That's actually pretty cool if you think of
it. Yeah. So like my
So it does kind of have it's a Pepper's Ghost 3D.
Exactly. It's out of stereoscopic, if you especially if you include eye tracking. My entire work at MIT as I concentrated in human computer interaction revolved around creating tech that could, I was hoping, help people around me. And specifically because of my like entertainment background, I really wanted to bring people together because people are social, and everything I had seen like with VR and AR headsets, it's so isolated. And I wanted to see if I could make something that, you know, multiple people could look at and enjoy and talk about. And so my thesis revolved around, it was like a 75 cent piece of Mylar right. on top of a 4K monitor. And then originally I wanted a radial lenticular, but we didn't have like a 3D printer or anything that could handle that. So we made like a parallax barrier that went on top of the 4K monitor and then reflected like a polar coordinate transformed image. Okay. So once you looked at the cone, it looked like there was a 3D object inside the cone. It kind of looked mm-hmm. like a, I put a TIE fighter in it. but, leave me alone. But you could also like, we also put in, you know, a couple of other objects like cubes, not as fun.
right.
But I would get a 3D model and then I wrote the entire thing in Unity. And rendered out the images, played them back as a video file on the 4K display so that you could walk around it, have multiple people walking around this cone, and they could all be looking at the same 3D image.
From different points of view.
Exactly, yeah. The original, I think, was like, I had like seven, I'm trying to remember. Oh, it feels so long ago. It's only 2 years. It was like seven different views, I think, with like a 10-degree separation between each view or something like that. And then I, depending if you have the eye tracking, you can retake the pictures live and then re-render them out because it's all in Unity.
Okay.
Yeah, and the work was extended by my good friend Emily Salvador.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
it was the two Emilys. Emily. It was Emily Squared on that project. and she did some amazing work. And then we everyone who got to work on it actually filed the patent together, and it was a lot of fun. It was called Funnel Vision.
Oh, I love it.
Yes.
I named it. I was very proud of the name.
F-U-N?
F-U-N-N-E-L.
Yes.
Funnel Vision.
Fun.
Because it was a funnel. It was a
But it's fun.
It puts the fun in funnel vision.
Yes.
Thanks, Kat.
I was trying to do a joke because you guys had the jokes earlier and I wanted to be funny too.
You should have made a picture of a cake.
A cake?
No, oh, that funnel cake.
Oh, that would have been good. I'll send it back to the lab. I'll let them know.
Yeah.
But after that, Ben actually, who works at Magnopus.
How did that happen? How did you go from MIT? Because you said you graduated, 2 years ago?
Yes.
Wow.
I've been at Magnopus for about 2 years.
So you went straight from MIT to Magnopus.
Yes.
How did that happen?
Completely smoothly.
Ben sniped me. He came and he was like, you know what? You can do the things. And I was like, vaguely. And he was like, great. Come on over.
right.
He came to MIT. Actually, Dan was holding a conference about space innovations. And Magnopus had released the Mission ISS application. And previously I had done work at NASA JPL. I was on the team that was sending HoloLenses up to the space station.
Woo, shout out to HoloLens.
It was called Project Sidekick. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also was at Disney Animation Studio, shocker, doing virtual production, kind of like tools, virtual, VR tools.
Mm-hmm.
So Ben had seen that work too, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's a small industry. And he came on over and he was like, oh, you're the kid. And I was like, that's me. And he was like, great. You should come and do the fun stuff at Magnopus. And I was like, sounds cool. And I flew my butt on out to LA. And
it was much warmer, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, I was very awesome. Happy. I'm originally from Northern California. Mm. And I missed my sun. Very, very much.
Well, there's way more sun here than
I was like,
in Northern California.
Old enough to have a sun now?
Okay. Honestly, though, like compared to Boston, it was I was so happy.
Yeah. I've seen it all. I went to school in upstate New York in the snow belt. So.
Oh, man. Like, yeah. It can get pretty cold.
But sorry to interrupt here, but this was actually when I was talking to Ben, because I talk to Ben often because he's a cool guy.
He likes to talk too.
He does like to talk. He's a talker. When I was talking to him, I was like, hey, you know, Kat was amazing on the podcast. Sally was amazing on the podcast. And I says, well, you got to talk to Emily because she's she's really cool too. It's like, okay. And then it's like, wait, why don't we have all three of them on? And that's when the whole brainstorm happened. And then I said, that's what we should do. And then I said, cool, let's do that. And then it was Lynette. He says, well, if you're going to have all three of them on, then you can't be on. He's like the man that's explaining everything to them, and it's terrible. I was like, oh, all right. But I am curious now because this is so cool. Like all these stuff you guys are talking about, like it's amazing the idea stuff that you guys come up with, right?
Well, I think it's a lot of like cross-sectional, you know, so many different disciplines. I also don't I want Sally to do her intro too, because it kind of is a little different as well.
I'm going to say this. Sally has a 2-hour podcast.
Yeah, Sally.
She can tell us what she's been up to more recently, but my gosh, it is one of the most popular podcast
episodes. Oh, man.
Episodes.
Wow.
You're so
popular.
Thanks, Mom and Dad.
Yeah. But yeah, tell us what you're up to more recently.
Oh, dear.
Because it's been a couple of years since you've been on.
That's true. Since we last spoke, let me think.
Well, you just did your thing for the TH.
Yes. I traveled to Malta for Trojan Horse Was a Unicorn, more than just a conference, a community, where I met some incredible people. Shout out to my squad. And
the tribe. That's what it's called.
Yes, the tribe. And within the tribe, also, a squad was formed.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
Ooh, inner
that's
squad.
That's right.
Yes, we have a group chat.
Really?
We do. Cool. Those are the kinds of things that are born of the THU. It is a magical place where friendships are fostered. And
I'm betting DeJoy is part of the squad.
Yes, of course. yes, we're having lunch on Thursday.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for the invite, Sally.
Ooh, awkward.
I thought we were having lunch on Thursday.
Yikes.
Oh, awkward.
Anyhow, that was fun. That and perhaps this concludes my 2019 filled with public speaking and mentorships and all sorts of attempts at community outreach, because I just felt this need to contribute to that community of people, and especially girls in high school or middle school or college who are like pursuing similar career paths. And so I just spent so much time in 2019 just trying to help people network, trying to give them some sort of guidance for like career. Like they're at a crossroads of like, what class should I do? Linear algebra or pottery? I don't know.
I wonder what.
And you said pottery. Okay.
Yeah. Pottery's sculpting.
Great,
yeah. Anyhow, stuff of that nature. I also started a nonprofit.
What?
Yes.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
This is my favorite story.
Yes. Yeah. So I am the CEO of a nonprofit called Local Changes. Mm-hmm. And what we do is...
Instead of remote changes.
Correct.
Yeah.
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 No. Or edge changes.
Right. No, these are local changes.
You gotta get with it.
I mean, they're local changes until you commit, right?
Yeah.
Then you push globally.
Yeah, then you push globally.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's all like poetry.
Yeah.
So the purpose of that corporation is to make information more accessible from the government. We've got all these California legislators that are kind of setting the tone for the nation almost in their sort of very progressive stance on various, you know, laws and bills. And, you know, they eventually percolate across to the East Coast in the center and all that. Anyhow, I couldn't tell you a single bill that was passed in 2018. I had no idea what was going on. Yeah. All I knew was that when I would show up to punch my ballot, sometimes there would be some random stuff in there about taxes. And it occurred to me, like, this is so important. Why don't I know anything about this? Turns out every bill that's introduced is not only introduced, but it's also tracked all the way through rejection or signing by the governor on a publicly accessible database. So we thought, hey, why don't we make this pretty and easy? So we started live comping bill summaries onto stock photography and uploading them to Instagram.
Insta.
And we thought, you know, this could be a cool thing we do, not just for California bills, not just for Instagram, but just as like a personal initiative to kind of use technology, social media, and art to make this sort of important civic data more accessible. So we decided to incorporate to protect our mission and make ourselves look really legitimate and ensure that we don't, you know, deviate from these standards that we publicly set for ourselves. And thus, Local Changes was born.
Wow.
And
it's huge.
Thank you. And you can find our Instagram, which is will be renamed, but is currently still living on as its whimsical first title, which is Billbot Baggins.
Billbot Baggins.
Yes.
Can you spell that for the class?
Yes. So it is a Billbot, right? Because it's a bot, a script that's running autonomously and doing things. Mm-hmm. And then it's about bills, so it's Billbot. And then Baggins, because we're
nerds. We need an explanation for that one.
Yes,
now.
So it's Billbot dot Baggins. Billbot dot Baggins.
And it's Baggins is spelled
Bagginis.
I just wanted to make sure.
Yes, that is our Insta handle. If you were to subscribe to that, you'd just get like a steady sort of drip feed of these bills, and it would just be interwoven with all your other like news or whatever about dogs and babies and flowers and whatever.
It's suddenly, like, something important just popped up.
Yeah, it's just a nice way to casually stay abreast of important information in your state. And once we've got that sort of all the kinks ironed out of that, we're releasing our code base open source, and we're going to seek and encourage people in other states to make accounts for their state. We've also got federal Billbot working. Mm. We just have to get him organized and automated and such.
But it's automated.
The only thing that's not automated is the upload to the gram, which that's is so frustrating
yeah.
because they removed their public API keys for that sort of behavior. Right. So you have to either be a large corporation spending a certain amount of money every year in sales on Instagram, or you have to know somebody, or you have to be like some kind of dirty, hacky scraper person, which we're also looking into.
Give me a ring.
Yeah. yeah, so that's maybe that's the other large thing I've been up to since we last spoke.
Yeah. So this is why Sally is the hero of the story. you know, making it possible for all of us to have someone that we can look up to and be like, oh, so cool. Well, I can also do that. That's amazing.
My journey has been made a lot easier by my various friends who are hyping me up and helping me network and encouraging me when I'm tired. So, you know, takes a village.
I wrote a blog post about caustics.
Caustics are important.
Oh, yeah, also important work.
No, nope, nope, not at all.
Encouraging
well,
people
it was fun. I thought
important.
It was fun. That's amazing, guys. I mean, I am so happy you guys are here to talk about this stuff. That's really cool.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also feel like this is a good kind of segue into our next one. Like, what's been your guys' favorite project?
Ooh. Was Billbot your favorite project?
It certainly is my favorite project right now of, like, things I'm actively pursuing.
Like, what tech is behind Billbot for, like, people who are like, oh, that's such a cool idea. I want to do some automated, like, open source processes now for Instas. Like, what are you? Yeah.
Python.
I mean, when I heard about this, I was like, oh, my God, I could totally do this.
Python, y'all.
Just the pie?
Import, chill. No, I don't know. Python is just, it's got such a prolific community of developers that are constantly uploading new classes and tools and APIs to interface with whatever. Like, as soon as something drops, you can bet your bottom dollar that a Python library is coming out to accompany it, either by the publisher themselves or like a eager community of indie devs. And so we were able to get all kinds of help from just the community by searching for various tools, you know, like HTML parser, Instagram, you know, scraper, whatever. There's always some kind of baseline stuff that's already been done. And like in the few cases it hasn't been done, it's like a very good feeling of like, now I get to do it. And then you put your code online and then you've helped someone else.
So. Is your code online?
It will be.
just checking, you know, in case I wanted to do.
I mean, I do have one contribution to the online Python repo world of joy, which is a cloud-based rendering pipeline from 3ds Max to Conductor.
Nice.
Very useful.
Yeah.
The people who want
very specific. But yeah, that's my only public contribution at this time. But Local Changes will be pushing its repo in 2020.
Nice. Do we have like a fiscal year?
Probably second quarter.
Second quarter? Okay. good to know.
Yeah. Yep.
What about you, EVB? Was your light field patent project your favorite project?
Oh, man. It's definitely up there. But I think it has been surpassed, I believe, by my most recent work on a project called Elixir.
Tell us more.
Yes. Sally and Cat know pretty much what it is. Oculus released on the Quest hand tracking. I don't know if you've seen it yet.
Nope.
It is very, very dope. Yeah. Okay. So what it's doing is it's using the four cameras on the outside to track your hands while it's also tracking the entire environment because it's sixed off.
Right. So it's not plugged in.
Yeah.
It's just free.
Untethered.
Yes.
Untethered.
And
no computer attached to it, no giant GPU powering
it. Yep. It's very, very lightweight. And it has full CAN capabilities. Like you actually have your fingers in there. Yep. All 10 of them, you know?
All 10.
If you have
10. Some have 12.
So this capability was demoed at OC6. And we were working on a project called Elixir to show off this new tech. And it was basically like a sorcerer's potionary that you could go and transform all of your hands in. So like you go in and you're like her apprentice and you dip your hands in dragon vomit and then you light them on fire.
That was vomit?
I thought it was just goo. Now that I know it's vomit, I'm not going to do that.
Even better. Well, the idea was, you know, we wanted to put people in a situation that you wouldn't do in real life, if dragons were real, of course. But the idea was like, you know, hey, here's some things. You would never stick your hand in a fire. You would never probably stick it in electricity either. And we wanted to give people that capability because, you know, it's always that question of why are you doing this in VR? There has to be a purpose, right? And there is no other place I could imagine being able to create this world and have the experiences than in VR with hand tracking.
Right.
So I was actually the lead designer on this app.
Ooh.
Lead design, yeah. And it was very, very awesome because it was incredible to get to work with such a wide array of talents on the team. You know, we had everything from like modelers to animators to set designers to, you know, engineers as well and VFX artists, everything you could think of. Right. And it was a lot of, you know, making sure that everyone understood the vision and like believed in the vision and wanted to see it come to life. That's what gave it the juice. Or the dragon juice.
Yeah. dragon power.
Yeah, and it was incredible. Mark Zuckerberg demoed it on stage.
Wow.
On camera on stage.
Yes, it was in front of the
streamed
and then
live.
He posted it on his Instagram. I almost fainted. we got a lot of we were able to generate a lot of excitement for it, which is always my hope in any project that I take on.
That's a great project.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah.
There were so many puns in
Oh yeah,
the narrative.
Oh man, oh, yeah. My favorite one.
Okay.
Put your hand on the grill like you're cooking a hamburger. That was my favorite.
They were largely hand related.
Hand, right.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you have a hand in working on them?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. You could say I handled it.
Oh.
Yeah.
I feel like you had your finger on the pulse.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I was going with something like that, but you did good.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. Thumbs up to you.
Yeah.
Shoot. That's the best
one. I was just thinking of another one. Yeah. Oh, man. Wrist? Something with wrist?
No.
No. Yeah. No, I'm bad with this. I try so hard.
Well.
Yeah. But Kat, was the HoloLens 2 your favorite project so far?
I mean, yeah, I guess, but like the thing that has a special place in my heart that is like my favorite project would probably be like my first project. Like, you know, the first project where you're like, you're doing it on your own, you're really exploring new technology, you learn the most from it. And so that's my project is my, I did Kinect because I worked at Microsoft. So Kinect stuff with Oculus DK2 at the time and how to do better inputs for just virtual reality. So tracking, gestures, all that jazz. But it was like my second project at Microsoft. And they were like, oh, yeah, you like this gaming thing. And I was like, yeah, I've worked with Kinect before, too. There's this new thing called an Oculus that came out. Can I get one and use it? And they were like, well, we don't do this VR stuff. We do, like, Windows stuff. And I was like, well, Unity exports to, like a Windows application. And then can I do that stuff? So it was my first large project at like a company that was like, hey, and then it introduced me to this new industry that is now my life. And it was really fun. And I learned a lot. And then talked about it for like a year and was just like, oh, wow, it's a thing that not a lot of people know how to do. And to this day, I still get like Twitter replies and comments and requests of like, hey, so that open source module that you put up for like the Kinect gestures and stuff for VR, can you like can you update it? And I was like, that was for Unity 5 and I did it like almost 5 years ago now. Like
that's ages.
Ages ago in this industry. Like Emily was just talking about hand tracking on the Oculus. Yeah, on the Oculus. And I'm just like, yeah, it's ages ago but people still use that technology and want to see it updated. So it's that project holds a special place in my heart and all that jazz. Yeah. But that's my favorite project. Sorry, Sally and Emily. Not the project I'm working on with you two.
But oh.
just say that.
I'm not on that project if you hadn't noticed, but thanks.
Also, you both didn't say, oh, a project where I worked with you, Kat. So that's why I was like, well, I can't say anything I've done at Macnovus because these two clearly didn't want to say me.
So Kat holds grudges.
If it's not clear.
Only sometimes. And I get over them fairly quickly.
What's that quote from that movie?
The grudge.
98% of the time it's already raining. What is that? It's from Mean Girls.
Oh.
What?
Never mind.
It can't rain all the time. From The Crow?
No.
Different movie references. I probably won't understand any of them. Like Chris earlier tonight made a reference and I was like, I honestly have no idea what you're talking about.
I was commenting on you guys are wearing, just so people know, people are wearing ugly sweaters.
Oh, yeah.
You guys have your ugly Christmas sweaters on.
Yes.
Just so you guys know, this will be probably coming out next year, so people know this is just before Christmas that we're recording this podcast. You guys had your Christmas party, I'm assuming, of some kind. Where
it was like Spirit Week.
Oh, yes.
Spirit Week. You guys are wearing your ugly Christmas sweaters, and Kat has a gloriously ugly sweater on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
I think hers takes
And
the
I
cake.
Made a comment. It's like, I saw an amazing one, ugly sweater, which had the Reanimator on it. And she said, what's that? I was like,
Rip.
I'm a little old.
You're upsetting Bella. Yeah.
I know. I constantly do.
So that's all. It was just about Reanimator, which is cool.
Yeah. I was confused for a while.
Yeah.
But then I got it. Ask questions was the lesson. Oh, yes. poor Bella. If you hear some whining in the background, it's none of us. It's
because I was too cheap to get a dog sitter, and I regret it.
Do you want to just let her roam around? Should I open the door?
I'm scared.
Okay.
Let her roam, Sally. Let her free.
What if she does something inadmissible?
Well, we can clean it up.
Yeah, resolve. Is that still like a cleaning product that people can use? Or has it been like banned because like bleach is toxic or something?
I don't know.
How about we'll just see if she wants to roam the room.
Yeah, oh, you unleashed her?
She's
unleashed.
The leash.
There she goes. Now she's much happier.
Bella. That's what she needed. She needed a good shake.
Yeah. Oh, man. Like come to me. Prove that I'm your favorite.
Yes, she is.
Oh, she stopped.
What were we?
Well, so, okay, that was your favorite project. What would be if you had your druthers?
Oh, no.
My what?
Druthers?
Your preference.
Oh.
But living south of the Mason-Dixon line. Your druthers.
Okay.
I believe it is a contraction of I would rather. Like, yeah, I'd go to Burger King, but a druthers go to McDonald's.
Understood.
I don't know. If you had your preference, what would your dream project be in this bright field of technology?
Oh, man. Emily, what are you going to say?
Oh, man. I personally, you know, as Sally mentioned earlier, I am a musician. At least I like
to play.
I like to claim to be one. I was trained in piano for a very long, long time. Classical piano. Many years. And now I kind of dapple in a couple other instruments, but that's pretty much my main one.
She also has her pipes.
Oh. I do sing a little bit.
Nice.
She's very good.
She's very good.
I'm not going to sing.
More wine.
Unfortunate, but.
I would like to do like a music project specifically to kind of up. Right now, from how I've learned music and have seen it, I feel like it's a little bit to the everyday person outdated. Like the way we listen to music is we just, you know, sit. And we hear, and music's a lot. It's multidimensional. It's more than that. And I wish that there was more of an experience to it. I also, when I was at school, I was in a hackathon, and I made a project called Pitch Paint, which was painting.
I love the name.
Yeah, I was painting sound in VR. it was a lot of fun because it was just kind of creating a new. What's the word? Nomenclature? Vernacular? Mm-hmm. Something?
Yeah.
Words?
Yeah.
Creating new words for what, you know, how do you describe sound and how do you experience it and see it?
Right.
And it's not necessarily like this thing from centuries ago that's written on a piece of paper that you have to learn syntax for years and years and years to understand. Mm-hmm. Something around that would be amazing. And I would like if it was in virtual space of some sort.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah.
That's very true. Cool. I never really stopped to think until I started talking to you. How like, for lack of a better word, like gatekeepery, like music education is. It's so arcane and specific. Mm-hmm. And is it really the best way?
Here's the thing, though. It's kind of one of those things that's, you know, it's been built up over so many years. And it does the job. If you think about how complex sound truly is, like being able to even identify it at all and understand its mathematical tendencies, if you will.
It's very mathematical.
Yeah, it's incredible that we have what we do have. But I do believe it could be extended further.
Yeah, it just reminds me of like cursive or kanji. And just like, will we see it deprecated in our lifetimes?
There's quite a few applications out there that, you know, have considered this. And have worked on it, but I haven't seen any in a while. Most of them have been from, like, I think a couple decades ago. You know, for like 2D mouse computer input. So now we don't have to do mouse and computer. It'd be cool if we could have compositions in space, I think.
Space composition. I love it.
Better call those astronauts you were sending HoloLenses to.
Yeah.
What about you, Kat?
Oh, man. Sally, what about you? Give me a second.
I wanted to speak from the heart, so I didn't prepare an answer.
Same, which is a mistake on our part. Why didn't we take a page out of Emily's book?
Oh, I was – that just
– Okay, her I heart didn't prepare is that. Sleeve.
Good for you.
Yeah, yeah.
That is from the heart.
I mean, for me, it's like dream project. I love working – I've worked in mixed reality and VR and this newish industry, like 2014, beginning of 15, for a while, but kind of doing the same thing of like, how do we integrate third-party technologies all together? How do we make, you know, a phone talk to a computer, talk to the headset, talk to a sensor that's sensing where my body is, talking to another thing? And, seeing it all work together, but I don't have a lot of experience and context of working in other industries like construction, healthcare, entertainment. We're in LA. And so for me, it's just more of applying all the stuff that I've learned. Now, instead of just building the foundation and building up new platforms of how to integrate the technology to talk to each other, it's more of how do we apply it in different creative ways that someone from the tech industry wouldn't necessarily know because they haven't been exposed to like construction workers on site, or they haven't been exposed to like the people who make out plastics and outlets. And I'm just looking around the room to like the sound foam. How can you apply that technology to making sound foam boards? I don't know, because I don't work in those industries. And I feel
love that
like,
stuff, though.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm lacking in just meeting people outside of tech and meeting people who, like writers, for instance, they're like, oh, yeah, we write, and then we print stuff out, and then we send it to each other and mark it up with a pen and paper. And I was like, cool, so what do you use for version control? And they were like, what's that? And I was like, oh, my gosh, you don't know about version control and all the, like, the possibilities of, like, you guys write narratives and you like branching narratives and like you have to remember which versions things were at. And like if you're writing stuff together, like how do you do that? And they're like, oh, well, I write the first draft and then I send it to this other person and then they edit it and then they send it back to me and then I write another draft. Oh, and I was like,
yeah,
why don't you just write it together?
Yeah. I know. I hate that because, you know, sorry.
Yeah.
But I've had this problem because we write a lot of blog posts and stuff mm-hmm, like that mm-hmm. and we have to write these things. And I have to teach these people, like, no,
mm-hmm.
don't just send me a doc file.
Right. Yeah.
Because I don't know. He's like, and then I send them, it's like, oh, I just rewrote it and then sent you a new. No, just edit it. Erase what I did. And it's like, but then you won't know what you wrote.
And it's like, no, I do. I can get
There's
it back.
A history. There's a history.
Exactly. So it's like finding those problem spaces outside of tech.
Yeah.
And then applying my knowledge of XR and MR and just – or just computer science in general. So similar to like Sally's Billbot. Where she's just like, this is so easy. I can just write a Python script and like scrape the gov.gov information and display it in a pretty picture on Instagram. And I'm just like, oh, I would like to go forth and find a thing that I am so passionate about. And for me, what I'm passionate about is like Dungeons and Dragons, anything in entertainment, a lot of just random stuff.
Yeah.
And so I need to – my dream project would be find something that I'm super passionate about. And so currently it's like Dungeons and Dragons and find a way to make it easier for people to be onboarded. And now that it's like mainstream and I'm so happy that it is,
yep.
you have some of those projects, but like one of my bot projects was working with Wizards of the Coast to try and make a bot to make it easier for people to learn how to become dungeon masters. And like I might revive that or revive a different project or want to do something with, you know, virtual production more and that type of stuff.
You know, what was interesting is I went to a conference that I'd never go to these types of conferences, because part of one of our big groups is the architecture world, right? Mm-hmm. But the architecture world, there's many different levels of architecture, right? There's like the design, et cetera. And then there's like the very practical, pragmatic architecture construction guys, right? Yeah. And what they were talking specifically about how much AR they use now in designing very boring buildings, right?
Like an office space, like an office park.
More specifically? A hospital. So if you're designing a hospital.
Boring and sad.
Yes.
Or happy.
But very vital in a lot of ways, because what they do, the hospital has huge amounts of mechanical stuff going on inside of the building that all needs maintenance, right? So they use AR to find and control the maintenance of all their equipment. So they just walk around the hospital. They used to look at a computer and go, I got to go find pipe J17 and make sure that the filter is changed on that pipe or whatever it is, right? Mm. Now they just walk around and goes, ah, that needs maintenance. Done.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's so much easier.
I hope they're
and,
using
and you, can, you can train someone so much faster using that.
It's true.
And it's just like.
It's so crazy. I talk to so many friends about my job because they don't really. Virtual reality and augmented reality, it's not really something that you see every day if you're the average Joe, I suppose. And it's so crazy how so many of these applications, it just makes sense. You know, you see these things in space. We act in 3D space. We live in 3D space. So I feel like naturally it just makes sense.
I remember what my project was. Sorry,
Let me finish.
Okay. Yes.
That was the thought. It was just like, that's why it makes so much more sense. You know, whenever we mess with 2D interfaces, a lot of it is just stuff that you have to train someone to use. And, you know, when you put a cube in front of someone and they have hand tracking in VR, they're going to go pick it up. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's just natural.
It's way more natural.
I remember what it was. Emily, you jump started my brain into remembering what it was that I wanted to talk about. It would be so amazing. Media is traditional media is a way of explaining a topic or explaining a point of view to a large amount of audience members in a very easy, consumable way. So you have like TV shows, movies, comic books. I would love for there to be a comic book series or a TV show series about VR at the state that it is currently at. So, but not for maybe adults. So Mr. Robot, I think, is a great example of this is what hacking is actually like currently for a large member of the population who thinks that hacking is like a GIF running in the background and a person is typing on a keyboard like really frantically and be like, I have to hack the blockchain, which is a sentence that I heard someone say in a TV show recently. And I was like, no, it was a movie. It was in the Charlie's Angels movie. And I was like,
physical
you could
pain.
Have literally spent 2 seconds and asked any tech person and they would have been like, makes no sense. Don't say that.
Ask Jeeves.
Ask Jeeves.
It makes no sense. Don't say that. I remember that. What was that? It was, not Hellboy. What was the weird movie? But it was one thing. The guy with the cape. It was on superhero stuff.
Sure.
John Leguizamo played the clown guy on it. Oh.
Batman?
No, it was before Batman. But anyway, they said, well, how is he doing this? Like, it's the latest nanotechnology. It's like, do you even know what that means?
No, they don't. And so that's what I would love. I would love for there to be a show similar to Mr. Robot, but maybe not like as dark as Mr. Robot. Maybe like a happier version or like an animated version of what AR and VR and mixed reality and our current sensors and what current AI data can do in a show or a movie or a comic book.
That's real.
That's real. And it's right. based in reality, quote unquote, but is like, you know, a little bit dramatized and is just like, oh, yeah. Because that's the current technology is super cool. And a lot of people are like, oh, that's a dystopian future thing. Like, a lot of VR is all about dystopian futures. And I'm like, no, this is so
cool.
You've
seen Black
Mirror. Yeah, all the Black Mirror stuff. I'm like, there's so much positive that can come from this technology.
Have you guys read the book The Inevitable?
No.
Oh, it's a great technology book.
We
have you heard of it?
I'm trying to. I'm thinking, no.
I think it's written by one of the guys who founded Wired. Or one of those guys. But basically it's about like, here's technology that's going to happen whether you like it or not. And here's how it's going to be. Here's how it's going to change the world and whether you like it or not. And that's – it's a really well-written book. Mm-mm. But it also puts a positive spin on it. Like, just because there's evil things you can do with it doesn't mean it's bad, right?
Yeah.
Deep fakes, right? Now everyone's freaking out about deep fakes, right? So like I'm like – yeah, but, you know, what's going on with deep learning and everything else that's going on is actually pretty cool, right? And so the internet can be used for a lot of evil, and it does get used for a lot of evil, but doesn't mean that it's all evil.
Right, and it can be used for good. So I think that's my dream project would be to work on a project either in the voice acting realm or in the writing realm or in the directing realm or in the technologies. Like, please just ask me if this is real or not.
So you want to make a movie about – how tech
or a TV show. I remember there was a TV show when I was a kid called Code Lyoko, and that was great. And I would like to remake that, but with actual technology of the day and like read. It was a French animation show. It was great, brilliant. Anyway, Sally, what's your dream project?
I thought in that time period I might be able to generate something that sounded more scholarly.
I think what you've already talked about is pretty amazing.
I have
Bilbo
a dream
Baggins.
Project.
Her Baggins.
Oh. Bilbo Baggins.
Wait.
I have a dream project. I just thought I could hide it, but I just want to tell the world.
Yes, tell the world.
Is this a world premiere?
Sally, I will support you in any way, shape, and form.
It is
for this
the
dream.
World premiere in a recorded forum.
Okay.
Which is that, okay. So we've got these assistants. A person who doesn't know any better might call them AI assistants.
Oh. Sure.
We have Siri. We have Cortana.
We have Google Assistant.
We have the mysterious Mica from Magic Leap.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But what we don't have is a studly, sassy man assistant.
Oh. Right.
I have never seen a virtual man or any kind of like... I mean, you can mod your phone so that it's like a British guy telling you where to go.
Yeah. Or an Australian voice.
But there is no like named famous like...
What about the guy from the Marvel guy? The guy...
Jarvis?
Jarvis.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that's not real. That's a TV show.
But he could be real.
And also, Jarvis was eclipsed by Friday. I mean, if you read the comics.
Well, it's also in the movie he's eclipsed by Friday because then he integrates with... what's his face? Purple dude that like Scarlet Witch. Vision. He becomes Vision, fuses with Vision, and then him and Wanda go out and like in a blaze of glory because then he, spoiler alert, Thanos totally gets his stone.
I'm not caught up with the MCU, but
what?
I did just read the Ironheart Collected Trade.
Oh yeah. That one's
it was amazing.
Cool.
But yes, I've never seen such a character. Nothing like this is like pushed on the American public. And like, I really want it to. Like, even looking globally, all the pop stars and all this, they're all men. They're all women. Lil Michaela, a woman in America. Like, that, what's that,
you know,
League
that
of Legends
came by
band?
Here?
Yeah.
From Brud.
Oh my God.
The guy, one of the guys who created Lil Michaela.
Why?
Amazing.
Sally.
Was it DJ Skeet Skeet?
Yes.
Oh,
he
man.
Came here. He was.
We are all big fans.
He wanted to talk to me about the WikiHuman project.
Perfect.
Yeah. And I was like, I had no idea what this was. Like, no idea. It's like, well, like what? Instagram?
They do have a male character called Blauko. I don't know how to say it.
He's not as big as a little Michaela.
He's not as big. He's got like a crazy attitude. He never shows his face.
Yeah, he always wears a mask.
Yeah, like, and then he's dating someone who's constantly other one.
Hiding his face.
What's her name?
Bermuda.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are they all the same?
Fake.
It's all fake. Rendered.
Yeah, but the personalities are real. The people are fake. The personalities are real.
The original dream project stands. I would like to be part of something that puts a male character in the spotlight that women can like enjoy having in their like car or whatever.
Yep.
They can write fan fiction about it. Like there needs to be something in the narrative that's an AI that's like a good looking dude.
Actually,
my daughter changed the voice of her Google assistant to a man.
Yeah. Wasn't there like a commercial last year during, I don't know, the holiday time? That was one of the assistants, but then they replaced it with famous people's voices.
Yes.
So I remember like Wanda Sykes was one of the voices and she was making fun of someone trying to cook or something. But that concept of like, you know, oh, I can change my Siri voice to Wanda Sykes.
Yeah.
My life is 10 times
better. But I see where Sally's coming from. It's like, yeah, you can change the voice, but like we want a personality. We want like a whole persona.
The whole package.
Behind, like Alexa. Is like a whole persona. Cortana is like a whole persona, but they're all women. Like, let's have Cortana.
I think Jeeves was the only one I can think of, and he was one PNG.
Yeah,
one PNG. Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Apparently, that's all you need.
Oh well.
Well, yeah. I don't know,
but I mean, they're missing out on 50% of their market, presumably. Like, what?
I mean, yeah.
Why not? Like, where it at?
Well, I mean, yeah, I feel like that's a lot of, you know, the society that we live in, though. Yeah.
Yes. And that is why it is my dream project, because I want to push the envelope.
Can I ask this? Do you think, like, now that I think about it, people who ask things to Siri or to whoever, when I really think about it, if you're looking at someone talking to their phone like Siri blah, 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 or, you know, Alexa, blah, blah, blah. Mostly men asking the question. If you think about it, visually speaking,
you are correct in my recollection of day-to-day friends.
Women are not as likely to ask questions to an assistant.
I would like to. If you think about it,
yeah, that could be an interesting study. I haven't seen many women asking questions.
It's always a woman in a kitchen. Cooking, so she can't use her hands.
Right.
But she's also cooking in a kitchen, and I'm like, of course she is.
Yes.
And then she's asking, in the commercial that I'm remembering, it's a woman talking to her father about how to cook like a steak or something.
For her boyfriend.
Boyfriend. Exactly. And it's just like,
That
was for Portal, but it's still like a voice commanded AI system.
I do.
Hey, Alexa, show me the recipe for a thing, which... Again, cooking is a very good example of,
at least
for the HoloLens, it was a great example of, hey, you can't actually hold your phone in your hand while you're cooking. So you need something on your head or something that's voice commanded that can respond to you where you don't have to use your hands or use your eyes.
And so I always felt like whenever I watched that commercial, it would be 10 times funnier if it was a guy like
trying to asking his dad how to cook a thing. I don't know.
I just
wife.
Also I don't.
Which would be more accurate?
That shouldn't be funny.
Right.
Men should be allowed to not know how to cook a steak.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So
that's a good point.
And it was just like that's the only time. Like, but women, like, you know, driving is another one. Hands free. Any hands free activity. But
honestly, I'll tell you what. Yeah. I've actually watched that commercial. Mm-hmm. And here's what bothered me about the commercial.
Yeah.
It's basically a ripoff of Bridget Jones's Diary where she messes up the dinner.
Oh, I've never seen it.
Bridget Jones's Diary. She messes
Our age is showing.
She messes up the dinner because she's flaky in Bridget Jones. Mm. And the man comes by and helps her figure out how to salvage the meal. Right. And in this commercial, it's the same thing.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Where she messes up something and is like, oh,
do you have pasta? Let's make something.
Yeah. Right? It's the same, yeah, she messes it up and then they have to make pasta.
So the man has to come in and explain to her like how to save the meal and great, have a great date.
Yeah.
And that is, I don't know. I had problems with Bridget Jones's Diary. We recently, on my other podcast called Martini Giant, we actually did a twofer where we did Bridget Jones's Diary and a Philadelphia Story, two different stories about women, right? And Bridget Jones's Diary, which is more recent, the woman is like, oh, I'm a ditzy girl, and the man comes to save me. Had a problem with that. Philadelphia Story, which is from the 40s, is freaking amazing, and Katharine Hepburn is a woman in power, and the men are completely like enamored by her being so powerful. That great story.
I haven't seen it. I'm so sad. I feel like
I love this story. So yeah. Anyway,
you're just
so. But it was sorry.
Yeah. No. No. You keep referencing amazing movies and like music, and I'm like,
welcome to Drinking with Chris.
So I need to go home. Watch all these movies, come back and be like, okay,
1940s.
I understand that.
Philadelphia Story, very funny, by the way. Jimmy Stewart, Cary Grant, Katharine Hepburn. I mean, big characters. Yeah. And Jimmy Stewart is a handsome man at that time. He was very young.
Ah. Oh, my.
Oh,
yeah.
My.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have this
I'm
movie?
A married woman.
Oh, right. You just got married. Yes. I keep forgetting.
YOLO.
She is off
the only person I know who would respond to congrats to getting married with YOLO.
YOLO. Absolutely sincere as well.
I know.
If you look into her eyes, it's like, yeah, YOLO. YOLO marriage. Woo.
Mm-hmm.
It's not YOMO.
You only...
Marry once.
Marry once. Yes.
Time will tell.
Yeah, time will tell. That's great. But anyway, it was a really good... I back to your assistant. I'm very curious about this assistant, male assistant. I think it's worth a study to talk about to see how many women talk to their virtual assistants because there's plenty of them right now.
I do want to add. I wanted to note this earlier, but I couldn't remember. I remember there was a study that I cannot remember which massive corporation did, but I want to say it was Apple with Siri. They made the voice female because it would be less scary. And they did They made it a female voice because they wanted people to be less afraid of the tech. And I thought that was controversial and was not a big fan of. Your hot take, Sally.
Hot take. I recall a lunch with the three of us or some quorum thereof.
Yeah.
In which it was discussed that in Hollywood, the AI that turns on humanity is always a woman.
Yes. Her, she's a woman. In Ex Machina, it's a woman. In I'm just trying to think of all the times that a robot has come back. Other than
the Borg,
was Skynet a woman?
The Borg
eventually?
In Star Trek was a woman.
Yeah, I think Skynet in one of the Terminator movies of like was personified as a woman once.
It's kind
of
strange. Well, you know. Well,
yeah, like
scary
not the Terminator,
because
the Terminator has always been male, but Skynet, the AI, I think is a woman or personified as one in like Terminator 3, the one that no one talks about, but is maybe still canon. I don't know anymore if it's still canon or not.
Do you think that's because, okay, beehive mentality, queen bee scatters out the drones?
I don't know.
I can't imagine. I don't know. Bees and technology, hand in hand?
Probably. Yeah.
I don't know. It is kind of interesting, though, like that it's contradictory, you know, in a way that all this new tech coming out seems to be woman focused, like female personality, persona focused, and yet.
In terms of the assistants.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, Or even with the rendered personas online, even.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like fictitiously, historically, the enemy and scary, but in rollouts for real life, soothing?
Huh.
Women's
Question
voices.
Question mark?
Grating when you don't like what they say. Soothing when they're helpful.
I was going to say when running for president. Yeah. Soothing when helpful.
Maybe it's because when you can only hear a voice, you imagine a smile. You know, Because if we smiled more, it'd be better.
Historically speaking, though, there has been, you know, a history of male assistants, right? A butler has been traditionally male.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And they are soothing, generally speaking, as a voice or as a person that gives you advice on what you need for today. Maybe you should wear this tie today.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But so, then there's like the nanny figure, right? Like
the head of house or something.
Yeah.
Some, I forget her title.
I can't remember.
You don't. I was
remember.
Watching Real Housewives of Atlanta.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say Downton Abbey.
Oh,
Downton. Yeah, I was gonna say like a governess.
Governess.
Or, yeah, yeah.
Is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. We're not like British. Jane Eyre. So we apologize to all of England and their history.
Rip.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that is very interesting how you mentioned like yeah, butlers.
That's why there was Ask Jeeves. Ask Jeeves was about a butler.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. I don't.
Sally, just create Jeeves.
Oh my God.
Create virtual Jeeves.
That'd be amazing.
Rendered Jeeves.
But he
Make
would need
hot.
Like a first name. Like, you know, like.
Ask.
Like we'd reboot him as like
John?
Jared.
Jared?
I don't know.
Not Jared.
George?
George. Yes, like Ginny.
Mm.
But with a J. But also not Ginny. Like George.
My son is obsessed with Frasier. He loves Frasier.
Mm.
You guys, I don't know if you guys watch Frasier, but
I watched Cheers.
You watched Cheers.
So, I love Cheers.
Okay, so Frasier is a spinoff of Cheers.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that.
Went off for like 12 years, but there's an episode of Frasier where he basically there's some old rich guy that died, and he had a butler, and then Frasier hired a butler to have for the house, and it was this whole thing about living with a butler in his house. And the butler was amazing at giving the best advice for different social events or whatever, but would do this specific thing.
I want a butler.
Yes.
Alfred.
Well,
oh, yeah.
It was really kind of – anyway, I did – just looking at – listening to that episode, I was like, oh, yeah, that'd be great. If someone's like, oh, you know, today's going to be raining, sir. Maybe you should wear your, you know – rain shoes.
I like it as a suggestion. Oh, maybe consider not getting soaked.
Right?
Unless like, you like, want to get wet.
I good have morning, placed sir. This over, umbrella yeah. strategically like, in front of you.
Okay, so, you know, there's a thing like on your personal assistant where basically like you're supposed to say good morning to your personal assistant. It's like, okay, today is what's on your
schedule. I had that set up for a hot second and immediately got rid of it.
Right. But what if it actually like
worked.
Sounded like a butler giving you advice about the day and like telling you what to wear. And
there
like,
was something about like the monotone voice. It was just droning through all of the facts. I had it going through.
Yeah, but not go through the fact. Just make it.
I know, but I was like, what's the weather? What's the time? What, you know, what is the temperature? And then like, what's the fact of the day? I wanted to know the fact of the day. And then, and then it started playing music and I was like, that's it. I can't take it anymore.
See, especially when you just wake up.
Yeah. The other interesting thing about all of this too is that the most I ever used an audio interface was when I lived alone. I lived alone. I had a Kinect. I would always say, hey, Xbox, because this was before Cortana really had her footing. And I'd be like, hey, Xbox, turn on. Hey, Xbox, like, go to this. Hey, check my messages. And when I did get Cortana, it was only when I was alone when I would talk to her. I'd be like, hey, Cortana, what's the time? What's the weather like? And it was usually on my drive to work. And I don't – thinking about it, I rarely use Alexa when my roommates are home. One, because audio interference, because my roommates are talking and when you say like, hey, Alexa, and you have music playing or like you have other people talking, it's just a shit show and it doesn't know it can't pick your voice out from a crowd. And it's just like, hey, Alexa, call mom. You wanted to call Bob? No, call mom. You wanted to empty out your entire bank account. Like, no, call mom. Yeah. And it's just like, it's just annoying at that point. And it's just like, oh, right. Audio interfaces.
Google Assistant is actually pretty good at that. I've actually been able to talk to Google Assistant in a crowded restaurant and that's okay.
I don't have Google Home or a Pixel, so I have not used
Google for a while. We now have both Alexa and Google Home at my place because we kept getting like free things.
Ah, nice.
Because it was like if you like signed up for Spotify, I can't remember, some sort of service.
And you get a free thing.
You got a free.
I heard about this recently.
You got like a free Google Home, and then I already had an Alexa from like Black Friday two Fridays ago, right. Like last 2 years ago or whatever. And it's funny to see like the differences between the two because, you know, Alexa will accept some phrases and Google will accept some phrases, but those apparently are not, those are not mutually exclusive.
Right.
Or are they mutually exclusive?
I don't think they are.
They don't always.
Yeah, they don't connect.
Yeah.
So for like the Google Home, we'll have to say, hey, Google, turn on the den lights or something. And then you get to Alexa and you're like, hey, Alexa, please turn the den lights on. Like you can't. It was very strange. Like I couldn't pick up the phrases the same way.
Right.
And it took some serious adjusting, especially because my roommate has an Alexa and then I have an Alexa. They're both Echo Dots and we both have the phrase lights on. So he'll say lights on and then my lights will turn on and Google will turn on and then his won't turn on. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. The funniest thing is when I go to, because we have a Google Assistant in the living room, right? It's a small one, but the speaker is still pretty loud. And so everyone's gone to bed. My wife's gone to bed and everything. And I'm watching a movie up late and I've had my headphones on and then I'm like, turn the lights off. And I was like, I want to just turn on. I was like, hey, Google, off all the lights. And it was like, okay, turn off all the lights.
Yeah, I've had that before.
It's like, and everyone wakes up and I was like, I'm sorry.
Leave the room, Google.
Yeah, Google, I'm clearly whispering and you can hear nothing else but silence.
You know, if I was on that project, I would have insisted, because it is human nature that if someone whispers to you, you start to whisper back.
Yes.
I like to whisper.
See, these are all things that a considerate butler who buttles correctly would buttle for you.
Clearly their team size wasn't large enough to consider all the factors. And
perhaps if their team
was more diverse,
had a more diverse background and wider range of experience in life, it would have occurred to one of them that it is human nature to match volume.
Interesting. It's like you just saw this elephant randomly sitting in the room, Sally, in our
empathy question mark?
Lightly.
A buzzword.
Yeah.
Dismissed.
Lightly referencing it. Yeah.
I think it's a great project. Sorry. See, we've already gone off on a big, long tangent about your project. That's amazing.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
I feel that butlers have a place in our virtual future.
I see. Yes. I would hope so.
Supported.
Yes. I would love to be supported by a virtual autonomous but thing that buttles.
Now, here's a good drinking game.
As we are drinking.
Name a time.
Oh, no.
Failure.
5 p.m.
To have a diverse enough team or a team with enough empathy has failed technology.
Yeah. Do we have all night?
I know we're going to go long on this podcast.
Yeah. Previously okay.
We're already at an hour and a half.
Oh wow. Well, I'll rapid fire. Yeah, no, it was all me.
I'm just like, no pressure. You guys can talk as long as you want.
Yeah, no, the one that comes to mind was the Xbox controller, the Bear controller. As someone who did not work at Microsoft at that time, but definitely used Microsoft products. I am a small human. My hand size for gloves is like extra small. And I could not use that controller in any way, shape, or form. Like a medium-sized male, quote unquote, in our American society could also not use that controller. And it was a detriment to everyone, and I think they ended up shipping a new controller because of it. And it was like, cool, you just wasted, you know, months and months of research, months and months of development, months and months of like factory time and blah, 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 and specs to build this controller that everyone universally hated. And probably because all the people you were testing on were really large men with really large hands.
And if I may also throw in phones into the mix.
Yes.
Once you have a, what is it, PopSockets, multi-million dollars now at this point.
Mm.
Yes. Once you have a multi-million dollar company making a affordance just so half of your, what's the word, user base can just hold
your
phone?
Yeah. Without dropping it?
Hold the phone. That is, hold the phone. That is a warning sign.
Looking at the back of my phone, which is shattered because I dropped it because, like, I was trying to, you know, swipe on it.
Just use
with
it.
One hand.
Like a person. How dare you?
Yeah, I know. Right. My
women
bad.
Are people?
No, of course not. My bad. Yeah. So that just hand size was one. Color. Let's use the soap dispenser model of the when a person with not a lot of melanin uses it, it works 100% of the time. And then a person with a lot of melanin uses it, and it does not register that there is a hand.
Mm. A concern.
Coming from
wait a
film.
Ah. Wait, soap dispensers?
Oh, have you not heard that one?
I did not know that.
Oh, it's a fun one.
Recognize skin color.
Correct. So there's several GIFs of people trying to use the soap dispenser. And I believe in the specific GIF that I am referencing, the person was African American. And they're just like 100 times. And then they use a paper towel, like one of the white cheap paper towels. And they put it and it instantly works. Every time.
Oh, my God.
And it was disheartening, to say the least, that, wow, you clearly didn't
That's like flesh-colored Band-Aids.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, nude stockings?
Yeah. How they're all a little too light for me? Yeah.
No kidding. I remember when I was in high school, I had an English teacher, and she said, I will give you extra credit if you can find Band-Aids that are your skin tone. And I was like, watch me. And it took me like 6 months.
Yeah.
It was awful.
Yeah.
And then I was like, you've made your point.
Right.
Well, I can tell you a film anecdote.
Yes, Sally.
As someone who has oft managed a color science pipeline, you are calibrating your entire project's color space to a single image of a
white
blonde woman. Called Marcy.
Marcy, yeah.
In fact, you can join Marcy's cult following on Facebook.
Ooh.
If you Google like Marcy Kodak or something. I don't
know. I have another one for you. There was a cameras that are trying to be smart. Right?
Mm. Mm. Oh, no.
Right? And they're trying to like tell you like, if you take a bad picture, maybe you should retake it.
Oh, right?
No.
And so it was taking a picture, you know, it's a bunch of, you know, took a picture and it said, did someone blink? And it turns out it was a bunch of Asian people that were in the picture.
It also falls into when I was at MIT, I made a poster. I very, very briefly got to talk to a nice woman named Joy. I might butcher Joy's last name a little bit.
Okay.
Buluamini. I think something like that.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Joy. She is working on facial recognition software that encompasses all skin types and, you know, races. And she specifically is African American. And she found that some facial recognition software just wouldn't even recognize that she was there.
Right.
And so she's done a lot of work on this. And she was on some very incredible articles and lists the past couple of years. But I think it's very, very important, especially with new tech.
I've also heard that some of the facial recognition software that's being used by FBI or the TSA or whatever is going on that side tends to lump everyone that is of a certain skin tone as like positive, and they can distinguish between non-African American people much easier.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. See, the ironic thing is that you can really tell what a team's makeup is based on the problems they eventually run into. So, for instance, the paper towel dispenser example. When a lot of people are like, oh, well, we're a very small company. We don't have enough money to do a lot of user research and market research. And so we can't do a lot of user testing of diverse people because we just don't have the money to do it. And that's true for a lot of companies. But at the same time, as a software developer, I test everything myself. And as a brown, small-handed woman, I'm going to be testing for brown, small-handed women because that is my base. I'm me. I can test things very quickly and easily. And if it doesn't work for me and my height and my hand size and my skin tone, I'm not going to say, hey, guys, we can't ship this product. I'm going to say, oh, there's a bug. I am going to fix it.
Right.
And that's the funny thing, because you know that the people who made that paper towel dispenser didn't have a single black person on their staff that was developing the project that could have easily tested it and filed the bug and said, hey, guys, it doesn't work when I use it. It's a big bug. Can't ship.
Right.
The end.
Yeah, it's
Let's
true.
Let's fix it.
I think it's kind of like if you – like the more diverse your team is, the more of an opportunity you have to account for everybody and make sure that your product is – what's the word? I don't even want to say like
robust?
Accessible. Yeah, yeah, robust is good. It's just the concept of, oh, well, why wouldn't you want to – be able to work for more users and be able to affect more people.
Right.
How nice would that be?
Yeah, it also so nice. Like for the people out there who are like, well, it works for our user base. We don't have to change. And I'm like, and we make enough money. And I was like, well, would you like to make even more money?
I know.
And they're like, well, only 5% of the people who play our game are women. And I was like, imagine if that was even larger. Yeah. Imagine how much more money you could make.
Why
if you
would
just,
I do it
what
for
if
that?
You, what if your game was so awesome and inclusive that even more than 5%, like it just grew.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, 15. Oh my God.
Yeah. And it's just funny because a lot of people are like, well, the monetary considerations of like the
but
extra testing and the extra engineering.
Well, that's BS, because they're looking at their existing market as opposed to their potential market.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's a poor business decision, and I like to
– nearsighted.
Yeah. And it's just like, cool. There is like a – for all the people who say things like, oh, it doesn't work for our market, and I'm like, you can grow your market. That's – you can make more money. You don't – we live in a – unfortunately, we live in America, which is like a very capitalistic society, and if you don't frame things in terms of money, a lot of the time the people in power don't care. And so I've gotten used to having to frame a lot of just basics of considering other humans that could be like that should be considered as, you know, people.
Mm.
As a market share base.
Yeah. Would you like more money?
Would you like more money?
But would you like more money?
Exactly. Would you like a larger target market?
Yeah. Well, it's...
And that's a reflection of the society we live in. And unfortunately, like, the people who are currently in power and, like, how it's quote-unquote traditionally been.
Do you think it's malicious or is it just lazy?
No, definitely not malicious. I just think it's just they don't...
Inconsiderate.
They don't even think.
It is
that.
Like Grace Hopper once said, a famed computer scientist individual who created compilers and helped co-write COBOL. No big deal.
Yeah.
Also was like
also
a Navy
coined
general.
The word bug.
Yeah, yeah, whatever.
Which was a bug in an actual drawer.
Yeah, it was a moth.
Yeah, it's a moth.
Yes, as she once said, like the most dangerous phrase is, we've always done it this way.
Yes. One of my favorite quotes by her.
Mm. I butchered it, likely.
Is that really what she said?
It's pretty close.
Yeah.
Approximately. Yeah.
It's the worst.
One of the most dangerous phrases is
we've always done it this way. Why would we change it? And it's like, oh, if it's not broke, don't fix it. And I'm like,
but
well,
it is broke.
It is broke. And then you just don't see that it's broken because you've made it for only yourself and people who are exactly like you. If you take the time to maybe have people who are making it be different. If every person is making it for themselves, if you have a very diverse team, you're already hitting a lot more market share.
Right.
Because if every developer is making it for themselves, I, a short Latina woman is making it for short Latina women. Chris, you're making it for tall white men. Sally, making it for amazing, beautiful, star unicorn humans in the world that are perfect in every way, shape, and form.
Thank you.
At all. Sorry.
Hard to follow completely that one.
Sorry. And Emily.
And Emily's just a mutt in the corner. Thanks, Kat.
Is it half Japanese, half Indian? It's a
Pacific Islander, actually.
Pacific Islander slash Indian woman as well, who is of medium height. That's already so much more market share than just...
With perfect pitch.
With, I mean, amazing pitch. If she would sing for us?
No.
Dang it. All right.
These are very good.
Very great
good
mics.
Dynamic microphones.
Yeah.
Very good.
If you would want to. Anyway, with perfect pitch and amazing vocals, you're already hitting such a more diverse market than, you know, straight white guys. Just saying.
I would err on the side of saying majority consumer population of existing tech product.
Yes, that.
In America.
Or the majority consisting builders of tech products.
Mm.
Because that is, if they're all building for
even
themselves.
Even more fair.
Yeah. That is what they are building for. Just because they again, it's not anyone's fault. It is just a product of, if I'm building stuff for me, I'm going to test for myself first.
So the reason I brought up laziness,
yeah,
it was a joke. It's my friend Graham, who's a developer, very, very smart guy. He used to have a joke, and he had a sticker on the side of his computer that was a big thumbs up, and it says, "Works on my machine."
Right? Yeah.
And so that was the joke. It was like,
yeah,
it's like, well, that's not where it ends. Just because,
honey, if it's not in the build,
F. Jenkins,
I don't care.
Does not build it.
Jenkins.
There we go.
A male. Isn't that a surname, Jenkins?
I thought it was his first name.
We are coming up with a name. Jenkins. By the end of this podcast, we will be nailing his persona.
He is a male butler.
There is Leroy Jenkins from Internet Memes.
Yes.
There is Daniel Jenkins, a VFX artist in Vancouver.
No.
This is the only Jenkins I know.
I hope you're listening. Shout out.
Happy birth of your first son.
Oh.
You're welcome for introducing you to your wife at Frisbee.
Wow. Sally.
Wow.
Taking credit
you.
For so many things.
I mean, someone's got to.
But yeah, that's just like a fun little thing that we have to think about.
I don't know a first name Jenkins.
I don't either. Other than the Jenkins that we use to build all of the stuff. And that's another quote you bring up. I thought you were going to say this when you mentioned your friend's license plate or sticker.
Sticker.
Bumper sticker. The best developers are lazy developers. Where
that
it's like they don't want to remake the wheel. Oh, we're so good is because we find ways to not like reinvent the wheel every time.
Work smart, not hard.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I am a proponent for that. But I think there's a difference between lazy and inconsiderate, as you were saying before. Mm.
Right. And that's the thing, is that a lot of people have been conflating the two of like, oh, well, I've considered me and it works on my machine and I'm not going to reinvent the wheel. And, oh, we've always done it this way. So why would I take the extra effort to change it? And so it's just kind of like, oh, it is a very culturally normative thing where developers pride themselves on being quote unquote lazy, when it's like, maybe we should change that and make more of an effort to go outside. But like, don't confuse laziness with inconsiderateness and kind of separate the two again, because I think they've just been pushed into
one. I think it's kind of like along the lines, we want to find the quickest path, but that includes as many as we can.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting conversation. I feel like this is very applicable to these like monolithic tech companies and these things that influence so many people's lives at the same time. But different kind of point of view. Mm. I have a friend. She runs a comic book company. She's an editor, a co-founder. And it is a comic book company dedicated to a very specific audience. Mm. So they write about magical girls.
Yes.
cute men in love.
Yes.
And her mission statement for her company is along the lines of, you know, we write what we know, we write what we love to read about. And if everyone did this and everyone had the same platform, then together we comprise one wholly diverse comic book shop. And it's kind of like this idea that her and her crew, they don't care for the mass market. They mm-hmm. they care for their niche.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if software will ever get to a point where it's so open to so many developers that and that you can be lazy and you can not be so generous with your inclusion and you can just write what you know and yeah. and explore fields you're passionate about. I wonder.
It is a good.
What if you think about it growing. Like? What if you think about it like the movie industry, right? The movie industry is so obsessed with the four quadrants, right?
Yeah,
and especially now with like the whole streaming wars thing,
right? Because streaming is actually becoming more niche.
Yeah,
right?
Like, and you specifically have to have so many resources in order to break into movies and TV shows now,
right? So, what if you're like, oh, I'll make technology that works specifically for Black women. Let's just put it that way, right?
Yeah.
What if I made technology specific? Well, there is technology, a lot of technology for Black women specifically, but
Afrofuturism.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there is. I mean, that's fine. That's great. You know. But that's the thing, right? Niche stuff.
What are the four quadrants?
Over 25, under 25, male, female.
Oh. A graph.
Yes.
A chart.
Which one is 2π?
So
the answer is zero.
So basically, like if you look at the latest Avenger films, they cost, you know, $400 million to make, and that means they need to make $1 billion to break even.
Yep.
So that means that the only way they're going to do that is to make sure that they appeal to the four quadrants. So that's what
yes.
you get. You get an average film.
Yeah. And I would like to say for those films, instead of yes and for improv, it's yes but. Yes but. It's been like they keep making movies where it breaks from that norm and they make so much money. Black Panther is like the star child of the Marvel universe of, sure. hey, let's
yeah.
not do the thing we've consistently done and change it up. And make a film
or
for
Deadpool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Deadpool. But
Wonder
you still
Woman.
Have, yeah. Wonder Woman, Captain Marvel. And it's like, let's put a woman as the star character. Let's put a Black man as the star character and have a majority of the cast just be Black actors. And it's what? Top 5 grossing movies ever? Top 10 grossing movies ever?
Absolutely.
Worldwide?
Absolutely.
And
but the risk factor was much higher, so the budgets were smaller, right?
For Black Panther?
Black Panther's budget was smaller than Endgame.
Well,
yeah.
Endgame, it was that chaos of high-profile actors. So I want to say like that
sure.
budget alone is
sure.
probably half the budget.
Plus the shawarma
but if
budget.
But if you're making, you know, billions of dollars in profit, you can say, let's see how Black Panther does.
Yeah.
Right? And that's fine. And that is good. You're right. Yes, mm-hmm. but – and it's a good yes, but.
Yeah. Yes, but Get Out. Yes, but Us. Yes, but.
Yes, and, but Get Out. Those are teeny budgets.
Right, right. And I'm just saying, okay, they have teeny budgets, but they're making on par with close to Endgame.
Oh, yeah.
So that profit margin
very
is
different
so
model,
big.
Though. That's Blumhouse versus Marvel, right? So –
But – and it's – it's interesting because you have the Crazy Rich Asians
yep.
is another one where they're like, we didn't see this coming. Yet if you asked any Asian person, they would have been like, yes, I will watch this movie like 10 times in the theaters because it was so funny and amazing. And it was so universally liked, not just by Asian people, but by white people, Latinas.
Great rom-com.
Great yeah. rom-com. Hot.
Also,
it
seems really
was culturally on point. I saw so much of my family like in that movie. That
yeah,
spoke to me.
It's also springboarded that male actor as a male viable love interest.
Yes.
Which a complaint I often hear from my Asian male friends is, I don't see myself represented in Hollywood as a sex symbol.
Yep. Into the Badlands was like...
Except for John Woo films.
Well,
his Face Off?
No, not Face Off. Like a Hard Boiled. What's his name?
My film game's quite weak.
Yeah.
If the weak film game people can't mention one, then it's not strong enough.
There we go.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like if I am moderately filmed.
Jackie Chang wasn't really a love interest.
He was always the side funny guy.
He was the funny neighbor.
Yeah,
literally.
Chang or Chan?
Jackie Chan.
It's Chan, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I was like, is there another one?
No. I said Chan.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Run the tapes.
I can't. Oh man, now I'm missing the actor's name. Crazy Rich Asians main lead.
The man?
Yes.
I don't know his name.
He's in Christmas Story with Daenerys Targaryen. I can't remember her name either. But Daenerys Targaryen and Crazy Rich Asians man are in a Christmas Story.
So.
Or like a new Christmas movie together. And I was like, I don't think I've ever seen that. And I'm thinking, and I can name only three male love interests who are Asian. One is from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. The other is from Crazy Rich Asians. Huh, a lot of crazies. And then Into the Badlands.
No, but Jason.
But Jason Bourne?
From the TV show.
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
No, Good.
Oh, the Good Place.
Good Place.
Yeah. Also,
love him.
Yeah.
I don't know his actor name.
Harold and Kumar actor.
Yes.
Yes. So who's
also done some really
great films.
He was also on the Obama administration.
There is an incredible TV series if you're into rom-coms.
Yes, always.
And formulaic bullshit.
Well,
called
not always.
Selfie about
I hate it.
No, we love it. It's perfect. It's about a young millennial woman who just like can't get her life together, and she encounters this kind of like sexy put together Gen X guy, and it is an Asian male actor.
Oh.
Chow Yun-fat was the guy I was thinking about from John Woo films.
That we can count it all on one to two hands is not a problem.
Meanwhile, name a white male actor who is a love interest. Go.
There's like 16 called Chris.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
Chris.
And I love that
all of them.
Charlie's Angels, which I haven't seen yet.
I loved it. I don't know why it didn't do well at the box office. It was so funny.
I read a Medium piece about how the Twilight actress, Kristen Stewart should be
amazing.
Included in the Hollywood Chris's of blonde Chris's we want to serve us breakfast.
God, yes. All the time.
I didn't
She's
know there
amazing.
Was such a list.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like Chris Hemsworth, Chris
Evans.
Evans.
Chris Pratt.
There we go. Yeah.
Man, Chris, I'll never get to be on this list.
Something. Well, yeah, you're Chris.
No.
So many Chris's. But yeah, it's that movie was great. I don't know why people are like, oh, it wasn't good as the originals. We missed the originals so much. Blah, blah. And I'm like, yo, I went in with like zero expectation, but also it was just a fun movie. It was fun. I liked it. And again, that was a movie that I pointed out that was like, we're going to hack into the blockchain. And I was like, this makes no fucking sense, but I love it. And I think it's
hear
so funny.
That phrase again.
Hack into the blockchain.
How was Rihanna's hacking in Ocean's End?
Very typical hacking, aka,
yeah,
I'm in. And
words,
I'm like, they did do something with a magnet where it was like a key magnet and they had to do like the super high powered magnet to unlock something.
They mentioned
which
like,
I was like, that's accurate.
Footprint. I've heard that phrase or term before.
Carbon footprint.
No, like it's.
I can hack back into it and find where they are because they left a footprint, and I'm like,
yeah, it's
no,
like how much space you take up
works.
And how
like
smart
you forgot to erase your
yeah, you forgot to erase your what you've
okay.
done, and so there's code
yeah.
left.
In the very beginning of this episode, Chris mentioned mansplaining, and I don't want to get too specific. But someone took it upon themselves to explain to me what a tempter was, and they wrote it out on a whiteboard in front of me and anyone in earshot, like /root/DMP. And I just thought, damn.
Recently?
What?
Yeah, it's still up there. If you come
tries
to the
to
office,
explain to you
if
what
you come
God.
Into the if you
who
if you
has
wait
that kind of
time
bravery.
Just time in general. You could also, Google's a thing. It just,
man,
what?
Like,
what?
Mansplaining aside, I don't know, was it age? Was it gender? Was it someone just wanted to write on a whiteboard? I don't know.
Yeah.
But like it,
this is
it
your
sucked.
Hate of whiteboards is showing, Sally.
I do
okay,
hate
calm
whiteboards.
Down.
I feel like anytime someone draws something on a whiteboard, it's because they don't have the command of language to explain it to you, so maybe they shouldn't be explaining it to you.
Hey, speaking from someone who is not very good at the English language, likes having a visual diagram for explaining myself because words are hard for me.
Okay.
The end.
Well, you're excused.
Thank
Here
you.
Is your hall pass.
But yeah, no, I that mansplaining thing, I'd love to see it on the whiteboard if we get back to work tomorrow. If we get back to work and it's still there.
Just take a standoff with my producer, enter the clean room, and observe the whiteboard that says root TMP, and then weep.
Or laugh hysterically.
For my pride, which was challenged by someone who felt like they had to write /temp.
And did anyone within earshot, because you said it was within earshot, turn around and be like, why are you explaining that? Of course Sally knows what the fuck that is because she is an amazing developer. And also you're explaining like rudimentary concepts to a pro dev in a very condescending way.
It's hard to not feel that your, you know, professionalism is challenged.
Yeah.
If someone, you know, draws a 30, 60, 90 triangle on a whiteboard and
tries to explain to you that they're all equals to 180 degrees.
Yeah. Huh. And again, I'm just like, how come no one within earshot? And so we were talking about this earlier today. Is it our insecurity that they're explaining it to us because we are a woman or younger or a minority, that the person feels like they need to explain it in a way that's so condescending and rude? Or is it because they're just a rude and condescending person, they would have done it to anybody?
Yes, that is the eternal question. That's
something that we have to ask ourselves, that I feel like a lot of developers who are in a majority represented don't have to ask. Like, if someone were to explain something to you in a really rude and condescending way, a lot of my male counterparts would never think that it was because they were being explained to because they're a white male.
Or because they're lesser in any way.
They would think, oh no, that person's an asshole and doesn't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, it's also interesting when I think, for me, the way I usually handle situations like this is I'm just like so brutally upfront and then later realize, oh, maybe I shouldn't have been so upfront. Like if someone tries to explain a 30, 60, 90 triangle to me, I'll just look them in the eye and go, that's offensive to me. And then they'll usually sweat a little bit and they'll leave. And then, you know,
but
success.
Then it's like,
oh, I probably should have been a little bit nicer on them. But at the same time, come on, man, give me the respect I deserve.
Or just like,
just ask them to draw a 90, 90, 90 triangle for you.
I'm sorry.
That's
I just
possible,
don't get
actually.
It.
That's possible.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Just if you're on the planet Earth and you're at the North Pole, you just go straight down to the equator, turn 90 degrees, go a quarter way around the Earth, turn 90 degrees, go back up, go back to the equator, and you got 90 degrees, 90 degrees, 90 degrees.
That sounds very reasonable.
But isn't that in...
Yeah.
Curved space.
Is it really a triangle?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a triangle, technically. I was a math
points.
Major and I love geometry, so I'm sorry. I'm not trying to. Was that me mansplaining curved space?
No, that was us asking you what you meant and you clarifying what you meant. Because we were literally
bad.
Like, what do you mean, Chris? We were all giving you like the. Huh?
I didn't look you in the eye and say it was offensive, so.
Okay.
You're in the
I'm sorry. Okay, but I just want to point out because Sally was on my other podcast, Martini Giant, and I was sit here and witnessed my good friend, and who has apologized, and we've mocked him for it, mansplaining to her VR.
Oh my God. Yes. I wish I could have been there for that.
Oh. Like, and he was like telling her what the all the advantages and disadvantages of VR is. Like, do you realize who the fuck you're talking to? You're talking to Sally Slay. And I was like, what the fuck are you doing?
Especially when you've been in the space for so many years.
I know. Well, then and, and he's put on a headset maybe three times.
Yeah.
To be fair.
Yeah.
Some To be fair. Some people tend to get carried away when there is a microphone or a venue with which to express yourself. Mm-hmm. There is an impetus to hear yourself speak. And though I don't care to be on the receiving end necessarily of such a monologue that is redundant to my education, it, you know, they need the training. They need to, you know, they need to make that mistake and then be like, oh, maybe I should pin that monologue and rather pick a different one, because someone else could elucidate in a much more, you know, experienced set of terms.
It is kind of one of those things where sometimes you see it happening and you're just like, I'm just going to let this. It happen. I'm just going to let this happen and see if they learn.
Yeah.
I will tell you another thing, and I'm going to make excuses for Dan here. Sometimes
not Dan from MIT.
Sometimes we love you, Dan. You tend to explain things because you're nervous.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was the other thing that I was going to say. A lot of people who are, like Sally was saying, just learned about a thing or excited about a thing or are nervous about being in front of a microphone or just in general wanting to seem smarter than they are, will start telling the story of X thing that they are not very knowledgeable about, and to the people in the room who are very knowledgeable about it will go, you don't know what you're talking about. But to people who don't know and who are new to the subject matter will think, wow, this person knows so much about it, when, you know, every other word is bullshit because they don't actually know what they're talking about.
They've never hacked the blockchain.
Yeah. They've never hacked the blockchain. They never want to, like, hack the receipt of trade. Like, that movie, it was so good except for that one part. I was so sad.
I'm sorry.
Elizabeth Banks, next time, hey, girl, if you ever want to make a tech movie, I'll work for free. Just Twitter me.
Your work has value, Kat.
But like, if I just get to meet you and be invited to the premiere and get to sit next to Kristen Stewart, that'd be enough.
One of the Chris's of Hollywood.
We will make this happen.
Oh my gosh, my heart is beating so fast right now.
I'm going to see what we can do.
Oh my gosh.
There we go.
Trust me, I'm
blushing so
this.
Hard. That was perfect. That was perfect. That was great. Yes.
I think this is a wonderful idea. I think that people need to know the correct things.
Oh, well, the other thing that I was going to say with it was just know who you're talking to. Take the time to ask who you're talking to and be like, hey, in meetings, one of our new leads that joined the team, she's new. But also, I think she just does this as a habit of her personality, is like, hey, what do you like to work on? What is your knowledge set? How do you do the thing that you do so that when I'm talking to you, I'm not telling you information that you already know?
Right.
So she always asks, like, hey, where are you in this progress? Tell me everything that you know so I don't have to re-explain it to you.
That's so optimized.
It is. It's great. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I wish all meetings could go like this, because then she goes, hey, who doesn't know the thing right now? And people just like raise their hand and it's like, okay, so I'm just going to go over this real quick since it's only one person. This is blah, blah, blah. And if it's more than like three people, she's like, okay, I'll go into this more in depth. And it's just like, if you take the time to understand who's on your team or who is just the person that you're interacting with, if Dan, who was thrown under the bus earlier,
RIP,
had maybe asked Sally, hey, Sally, what do you do or who do you work for and what do they do, he might have realized very quickly that VR
just
was a thing.
He knits these very beautiful soliloquies of tapestry, and it is satisfying to hear them to completion.
Yes. But before the microphones were rolling, like when you guys were grabbing probably a drink for the elephant, what was it?
Martini Giant.
What?
So the podcast is Martini Giant, and they always make a drink for it.
Mm.
And so, like, while they were making the drink before the podcast started.
Oh, he knows who Sally is.
Right. But then
– I think he was nervous because – well, first of all, Dan likes to just go off and talk, right? Mm. And so he made his point, but he didn't realize – he was making his point without realizing Sally's right here in the room, right? So he's making a point about VR that he wants to talk about. And it's like, but – why are you talking about it when Sally should clearly be talking about it? So that was really what it came down to. You know what I mean? And I'm not necessarily – and listen, he has repented this ad nauseum and we make fun of him.
Good
and
job.
He's a great person.
Well, you know –
Dan Thorn is a really good person.
This comes up a lot. I feel like I will begrudge a scenario and I will say – I did not enjoy – not that scenario,
right,
for the record. And I will say I did not enjoy the conversation. I removed myself from the premise. And people will say, why didn't you change the conversation? Like, why didn't you do something?
Oh, my God.
And your answer, and your answer?
I mean, it depends on the room and the conversation. But my answer is typically – you know, I felt like it could be a number of things. But maybe you just don't have the energy that day. Maybe you think that your few statements in the room won't change the pattern and it's just a drop in the bucket and you move on. Maybe you feel your silence is a stronger statement, maybe, which others would view as counterproductive. There's a number of reasons, but like this is a common theme of like, if you didn't like it, why didn't you change it? And I feel like this is something
that's
that
like
falls
so
upon
victim blaming. I don't, you know, as someone who is been told she is confrontational, I have to say, like, I would never blame someone for not changing the conversation when they're uncomfortable, because that's just not. It's like saying like, oh, well, it's your responsibility to make up for someone's lack of consideration, you know? The consideration should have been there in the first place.
Yeah.
And it sucks. It just sucks. Because, again, like Sally was saying, I'm tired. I don't want to have to represent Latina queer women every goddamn day. I get tired sometimes. Please just Google it yourself. And a lot of...
And honestly, sometimes, like, I've seen, like, oh, just pass that person on over to someone else, right?
Yeah.
Or like, just... EVB will handle it.
There's some great allies out there.
Yeah.
And a great ally is a person who will take it upon themselves to do research and maybe double check with a person in a minority group to be like, hey, I did some research. This is the message that I feel like you are trying to talk about or represent, and I want to make sure that when I'm correcting my fellow majority people, that this is a reality that you are facing.
Mm.
And it's like, great, yes, thank you. Yes, that is a true thing that I have to deal with every day. If you could take it upon yourself to talk with your peers who may actually listen to you more than they will listen to someone in the minority, because – historically, humans will trust people who are like them more than they will trust someone who is different than them. And so if someone who is like them is telling them, no, this person who is different, who is saying these things, those things are actually true.
Yeah.
Mm. What a crazy world we live in.
As sad as it is. Like,
they
this
will
is
believe
so,
it more.
So, so pertinent in, you know, structure for, like, your team, even, like, any engineering team, right? I remember when I was trying to find, like, I was on a project or something, I can't remember, but I had my team lead, who was a guy, go and introduce me to all the other engineers. And he was like, hey, this is EVB. She knows some things. So, you know, respect her. And that made such a big difference because it wasn't me having to defend myself before unknowingly, like not knowing if there was going to be some sort of weird offensive thing that was going to happen. But it was just the concept of, oh, if you let outside, foreign, whatever, in, then it's safer for everyone and you just get more work done. You know, there's no longer the questioning of someone's place on a team. It's more like, oh, okay, well, this is what you know. This is what I know. Let's go.
As an engineer, one might say it's more efficient.
Oh, my.
Oh, wow. To cut through the whole, I do not know or don't know what this engineer can handle. So I'm going to question everything that they say, but rather just ask, hey, do you think you can handle this? What is your, like, experience with this? What do you enjoy doing? What would you like to learn? And it's like, oh, I'm very good at X, Y, and Z, and I'd love to learn A, B, and C. So my skills are not great in A, B, and C. But I would love work. I would love A, B, and C work. But just know that it will take a little bit more time. And that I will put in the hours and I will learn. And if I have like someone to pair program with, I'll learn even faster. And then I'll be able to do A, B, and C as well as X, Y, and Z. All the letters. It's the whole alphabet at that point. So, yeah, I feel like it's just an efficiency thing and like being a kind human to other humans. Mm-hmm. Just like be considerate of other humans. Be efficient with how you disperse knowledge and get knowledge from other people and be like, hey.
Yes, I recently this year learned this sort of phrase about, it's abundance versus, there was a cute word, but another it was lack a. thereof.
Mm.
And it was sort of this idea that either resources were plentiful or not so much. And I don't know if it was my attitude or the actual state of the world, but while I was in visual effects, it really felt like there was not so much. Mm. And it felt like I had to watch my back and like be the best TD. And if I shared my secrets, then like, oh my, I might get replaced. Whereas now, lately, I don't know if it's like the zeitgeist or my own maturity.
Yeah.
But I'm much more subscribing to the view of abundance.
Yeah.
So I share my knowledge and I share anything I have. I just say, hey, how about this algorithm that I just slaved over for 2 weeks? Just use this random engineer on another project.
Yeah.
And that sharing and optimization of stuff.
Yeah.
Has been so rewarding.
I'd like to say two things on that real quick. One is, yes, that's amazing. Of course, Sally would do that because she's just so amazing and wonderful and, you know, the hero of what engineers should be. But
now.
Now.
Maybe.
Well, always. You were always on your hero's journey, Sally.
Thank
You're
you.
Now just realizing where
very
you are.
Generous.
Yeah. But it's just like, cool, people who then use Sally's algorithm that she slaved 2 weeks over, please don't take the credit for it.
Ooh,
because that is a thing, credit. Unfortunately, for women, like,
let me go.
I don't know how common it is for other guys to take credit for other guys' work or other, you know, majority gender non-binary people who identify as male in the majority. But it's just very frustrating when you have a lot of barriers of entry and you have a lot of extra judgment placed upon you, and then the work that you do is not acknowledged or is stolen by somebody else who doesn't have those barriers that they have to overcome. And it just is so counterproductive and annoying. It's just annoying to, one, not have your work acknowledged.
It's also a plot of almost every movie.
Right. Yeah.
And it's just like you take one step forward and two steps back.
And it's so frustrating because it's like this was a thing that like proved that, unfortunately, I had to prove that I was even an engineer, but it was evidence that I was an engineer. And then some random dude like in a meeting, I did this all by myself.
Oh my God.
And then it's just another consideration or point to management or to leadership or to people who can make leadership or management decisions that, Chris wrote that algorithm, not Sally. So when it comes time to promotion or comes time for bonuses or comes time to like put people in leads or give people more work or trust people's decision. It's, well, I'm going to trust Chris's decision on another algorithm that's similar to this original algorithm that Chris obviously wrote, or Chris made this awesome algorithm, so I'm going to put Chris as lead engineer, when it was actually Sally's work, but Sally perhaps did not speak up because a variety of reasons of she was tired that day, yeah, or she wasn't even in the meeting to begin with, or because she was on a different team, or was or sick that day.
Then she would be considered whiny.
Yeah.
Or all of a sudden she's...
Or confrontational.
Right.
Instead of, you know, speaking up or assertive.
Well, yeah. Speaking of giving credit, I recall now, it is called scarcity versus abundance. Mm-hmm. First heard about it on Jonathan Van Ness' podcast, of Getting course. Curious.
Ooh. Love JVN.
JVN. And I absolutely subscribe to scarcity for the earlier part of my career. And I would justify those moments of taking credit for someone else's idea or harboring some research, not as my own, but just as like, this is my throughput. I own this throughput. This is mine. And I wouldn't bother to attribute it to, you know, GitHub or fellow TD, because I just assumed it was a given. I would just think, of course I researched this. Like, everyone knows that this is some idea that came from standing on the shoulders of giants, so therefore it is mine. Mm-hmm. And that this was just like a point of view, a very defensive sort of like a very thing I took for granted. And now I just find that so abhorrent. Like, mm-hmm, credit, yeah, everyone you possibly can, because why not? It's not subtracting from your value. Yeah.
And I think the other thing too is it's developed over like a fear of over time, because, mm-hmm, you know, our entire, at least my entire life, I guess, professional work, school work, whatever, what have you, I have always constantly had to defend the work I had doing, its value, what I had actually done, explain every single little bit of it. And, oh,
and,
you know, yeah, you have to explain every single bit, fight for every single bit. And then once you've done that, it's like, well, I feel like it's hard to give up, you know, but yeah, it's not giving up.
Well, it's, and also,
that it's sharing.
It's your right, legacy. It's sharing. Yeah. It's, well, it's also goes back to a joke. And I feel like there's so many jokes in computer science, which are just like, maybe we shouldn't be doing this and it shouldn't be normalized, is like, oh, well, you're creating job security. Well, they'll never fire you if you're the only person who knows how this algorithm works.
Right.
And I'm just like, if you're the only person who can read your code's not good. Get out. Yeah. I don't want you here.
Yeah.
Like, if
you're
no
the
one
only
can,
person who knows what's going on.
If you
on,
aren't writing documentation for your code, like, get reprimanded. I get hate that. Yeah. Go get reprimanded. Because it's just like, it's annoying. It's inefficient. And as an engineer, it's like the most annoying thing to me. It's like, your inefficiency is putting the whole project at stake. It's putting everyone behind, because God forbid you get hit by a bus and can't work on the thing, and you're the only one who knows how this section of the code works. And now it takes us a month because, one, your code isn't well documented, you didn't write it well, so it's impossible to follow, and it's just like not modularized, so you have spaghetti shit everywhere. And I'm just like,
no one likes spaghetti shit.
Yeah, no one likes
what
spaghetti shit.
What an image right there.
And it's just so inefficient and annoying. And it's just like, if you write really good code and you share it, people will attribute you with writing really good code and sharing it.
Yes, and if you're that psycho genius that wrote that really spaghetti code that's holding the company together, they're not going to revere you.
Yeah. They're going to eventually
hire
you.
Holding them hostage.
And they're not going to last very long either.
Yeah.
At some point, someone's going to write code that's going to go around that, and then they don't need you anymore.
Which exactly, they will do immediately, because on the next project that you aren't on, they're going to have to do it anyway. And then they're going to, and the higher ups and CEOs or whoever is running the company is going to be like, yeah, you know, Sally wrote this spaghetti code, but EVB wrote this thing that just goes around Sally's genius and is so much easier to understand. Let's just use EVB stuff. Heck,
this is the first time this
we'll
will
even,
ever be.
Yeah, yeah. This is all theoretical. Sally is amazing and has never wrote any code like that whatsoever.
Obviously, it's always theoretical, because I never took credit for anything that Sally's ever done.
Yeah, Sally is perfect in every way.
Just not true.
You always end up as a superhero.
I mean, she is. She,
well, what a name is Sally Slade. You gotta,
exactly. Uh-huh. It is such a superhero name. And people who are listening just know that I revere Sally as a senpai. Yeah. She is the teacher and mentor that I've always wanted. And I'm so happy I met her. And I would say this any time of day or in any context. So this is not weird for me in any way, shape, or form. Sorry, Sally, that I'm embarrassing you on live, not live, podcast, recorded TV. But in the future, if I look back on this, I'll just be like, yes, I was speaking from the heart and everything I said is still true to this day. Mm, nice. 20 years from now. Prediction.
Beautiful.
You know.
Thank you for that.
2040, Sally Slade.
Crystal clear for sentiment. President.
Or is 2040 an election year? Probably not.
Divisible by four.
Multiple
four.
Yeah.
So it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2040, Sally Slade for president. I'd be there.
Damn.
I'll consider it.
You know, I don't see myself running for president, but like I desperately want to not feel compelled to run for some sort of public office, because if you read these bills, people.
I was about to say, you wrote Philbot. You're already starting down the path, Sally.
Like, holy shit, this shit's fucked.
Yeah, in 20 years, Sally, you will be, imagine, you're just starting on your hero's journey
you
for your second half.
You need to be reading these bills. I swear to God, 1/8 of them are just like, we are dedicating this public freeway to this person who planted this flower garden. And it's just like, can you not, like, can you, like, address, you know,
homelessness? Yeah, living in LA. Yeah, huge problem.
What a concept.
Didn't Amazon just, like, Bezos just donate something to someone?
Oh, because he dodged all of federal taxes and then paid like 0.1% of what that would have actually cost to just donate to some stuff for good faith.
Which he could still do even if he was paying taxes, because he's the richest person in the world.
But as my...
Bill Gates did a really good thing about that, because obviously Bill Gates is a huge philanthropist, as we all know. But he talked specifically about the fact that philanthropy only pays minuscule compared to like public policy and taxes, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you can't just say, well, just pay less taxes and then the rich will just donate to the poor.
No, they won't.
No, they won't.
They won't.
They won't.
They'll donate to
We don't need to get political about it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Everything he's doing is legal. So we just need to close those loopholes. The end.
So that is your platform for 2040. Thank you. All right.
Now, we are at 2 hours and 20 minutes, which, by the way, you guys can keep talking as long as you want. I just want to let you guys know the time.
Cognizant.
Or if there are things that you guys like, you know what, we haven't covered this. This is really important.
Where's the list?
You guys should check out your list, because I don't have access to lists. I'm just recording this podcast.
I think internet died.
Most of it.
Okay, there's...
And was there any wrap-up questions that you wanted, Sally?
This is fabulous.
There's one thing I just want to drive home, and I feel like we glossed on this earlier, but I just want to share with our listeners.
Boys clubs?
No.
Oh.
What does bias feel like?
That's a good one.
And
Emily,
I don't,
you start.
Sally, you were starting it.
Okay.
Give us time to prep our answers.
I mean, we can rip this bandaid off and put it right back on, but like, I feel like maybe some people are listening and they're just like, is it a big deal to be a woman in tech? Like, is it that bad? And
these
like,
three are doing great.
We're doing great. We are doing great. Thank you. Thank you. But also, bias is a thing, and here is what it feels like. It feels like an insecurity that you have that you cannot remove. So, you know, if something happens in the workplace, you will ask yourself, is this because of my gender? So, you
or
know,
race.
You'll, or race.
Or identity.
Anything. And you'll just say like, oh, I'm being paid hella less. Is this because they just saw me and they saw that I'm Latina? Did they see me and they see that I'm a woman? Did they see me and see my orientation? Like, and just assume that they could pay less and that I wouldn't fight? Or is it because I'm a shit negotiator? And like the reality check is always there. Like, I mean, I'm speaking for myself here, but I'm not so full of myself and my like air quotes predicament that that I'm thinking anything, you know, that happens to me that's in the negative column is because of my gender. But like, it's something that statistically you have to consider. Like, was I left out of that meeting because of my gender? Like, was I, you know, labeled a designer and not an engineer because of my gender? Or was it because of my mad artistic skills and my ability to design the shit out of everything, even though I'm literally engineering just like the man sitting next to me and all we're doing is engineering on this project? Like, these
he gets to build to engineering and you have to build to design?
Yes.
Yes.
And these are the kinds of things that you just have to ask yourself, not because you're paranoid, but because statistically it is viable and valuable to ask yourself. And that, to me, is what bias feels like. And that, to me, has defined my, like, journey as a woman in tech, is, like, just questioning everything and wondering if it's because of the female, you know, expression.
And for listeners, 9 times out of 10, you will never get an answer.
You won't.
Like, very rarely will you have the opportunity to ask management, and very rarely will they actually
answer. Is it hard to define it? Like, if someone said, we didn't invite you to this meeting because you're a woman and we assumed you need to go home because you have kids to take care of, as an example, right?
Yeah, that never happens.
No.
Yeah.
No, but, well, it does.
They will never tell you that, though.
Exactly.
To your face.
Sometimes they will when they're like drinking or feeling vulnerable.
they'll hide behind the whole, oh, we were trying to be considerate.
Right.
And then that's like, you just turned it on its head, upside down. That's not the point of.
Wait, keep going though.
I'm not going to go on with this story because it's personal, but that happens.
Yeah.
Well, we assumed that you didn't want the promotion because it's going to be more hours and you have kids to take care of.
It also happens. It also happens the other way.
Like, does that just make you angry?
Okay. It can also happen of, did I get this promotion because I will now be the only female lead in the company and that looks good.
Yeah. And it's just a thing that we have to.
Reverse bias.
Yeah.
All right.
Where it's like.
Still bias?
Okay. Oh, she only got that because she's a woman.
Can I ask you this?
They just want more women in
power. And I actually want to be serious because this has happened. Okay. So women in tech is a big subject right now. Big subject, especially if you're like planning a conference, right? And you want to bring as many women as possible into the technology area, right? Mm-hmm. To talk about women in tech and to represent female empowerment, which I'm all for. I'm all great about it. It's all good. But I feel like a lot of women are put on the spot. And I'll say this too. It's like, you know, maybe we did this with you guys to talk about that specific issue.
Yeah.
And does that feel BS? Right? Because that's not
the tokenization.
The tokenization is like, oh, look, she's a woman and she's a, you know, marine biologist. Fabulous. Right?
Fabulous.
You know what I mean? It's like, oh, yeah. You know, so like, okay. So like, what's the point? Like, I, honestly speaking, I love Sally and Sally's work for all those reasons, including the fact that she's a woman. And I think that's actually an important part of why I think Sally is special, is because she brings a female sensitivity to an issue and to an industry that needs it. And I've known you guys very briefly. I've worked with Sally, so I can only say this more personally. But that's what things is so cool. And so I was like, Sally's got some great ideas, and she brings a different point of view, like someone who's actually tested the hand dispenser, right?
Yes.
Like, oh, you know what? This shit don't work.
Yes.
Yeah.
Real quick, as much as I love Sally and think she's amazing and wonderful and is perfect in every way.
Thanks, Bae.
Thanks. Sally is, there are many Sallys out in the world.
There are many
Sallys. And that's what's sad is that a lot of people don't realize that there are actually a lot of goddamn Sallys in the world.
There are. And I hate to be Sally to be tokenized in that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I hate for you guys to be tokenized in that way. But I love how this conversation went because, you know, it's been, you know, 2.5 hours and, and I was like, okay, here's what we're going to talk about because like, you know, I've done these conversations and you guys took it a completely different way and you gradually brought it back in a really great way.
Well, I think
I want you guys back a lot.
We should do like a
– You guys should have your own
–
You can spin it off into another podcast and I won't even talk.
We'll do a mini series. Well, I like having your perspective here too because I like to hear what – when we say something, I like to see your reaction.
Okay.
To stuff.
Diversity is good.
Exactly. And that's the other thing that I wanted to quickly mention was like – diversity doesn't mean no men. It just means a mix of a lot of different perspectives. And so when people are like, we want more women at conferences, I'm like, well, then put women on the board of the conference that you're trying to make because they know how to get other women like involved. And right. if you have one at the very top and in the middle and at the bottom, not just at the top where it will quote-unquote trickle down or not just at the bottom where they'll grassroots it. It needs to be at all levels. And it also just – if you have an equal number, not just the one token, it no longer becomes a token and it becomes just another voice in the room because it's supported at all levels with a bunch of different people and it's like, cool, she's not the one voice for women. He's not the one voice for men. Like if a guy wants to stay home with his kids and actually doesn't want the promotion and like that's fine. And if also if a woman doesn't want a promotion, wants to stay with her kids, that's fine too. But it needs to be fine for whatever gender you what is it? Like whatever gender you identify as or express, it shouldn't matter. And that's the hard part. And to Sally's point, you know, we might eventually get there one day, and that would be so nice.
And until we get there, my message
vote
to others
40?
No, is that it's it, at least from my personal experience, mm-hmm. it has been okay to be a token. Like, yeah. I do not mind the insecurity and, like, weird feeling of, like, did I get invited to this panel because I'm a woman? It does not matter. Like, you need to put that aside and consider the audience and the young person in the audience who's like, oh, I could be that. I could do that. Like, she's so cool. They're not necessarily thinking about, oh, were you invited there because of your gender? They're just excited to hear your perspective.
No, it's the old white man that's going to say that in the background, right? And that's that. I'm sorry, but that's the case, right? There's someone's going to say that in the background, and they do say that. Don't worry about them.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about them. Worry about the young girl in the foreground that's going, oh, my God, I want to be like her.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I guess, I'm personally okay with the concept of being a token as long as I feel like we still have work to do. And I can take advantage of that and
there
help.
Nice way to say it. Great way to say it.
Let's end it. That's great. Woo! M.
I love it.
I only have a couple words. I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry. You ended the podcast. You dropped the mic on this one.
Can you sing those words?
No, I'm not going to sing.
Did we not give her enough wine?
I had a nice hearty glass. Thank you very much.
Good for you guys. Thank you so much for doing this, guys. And did you guys enjoy this?
Yeah.
This was a great time.
Yeah. Thank you, Chris, for, giving –
I'm only saying this because I want to have it again. If you guys are up for it. If you guys have more subjects, you have any other ideas or things you want to talk about.
Oh, it's always infinite.
It can be done.
Yes.
And just about anything. Obviously, it doesn't have to be anything about inclusivity or
gender. So Dungeons and Dragons and my new TV show about mixed reality.
Nice. Yes. Actually, I have so many things to tell you guys, but it's so exciting. So exciting. Well,
thanks so much, guys. I appreciate it. And thank you for taking over this podcast.
Oh, well, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing your platform and being a chill ally.
Yeah. Chris, chill ally.
Chill.
Oh, and Bella.
Bella.
And Bella the dog for not being overly boisterous.
Oh, no.
Except for at the beginning.
I think she needed to do was to roam around the room a little bit, and then she was like chill. It was like,
she just secure the perimeter.
Yeah, she did good. And I can hear her licking. That's good. Hear that?
Yes. Yeah, there was.
You got that ASMR?
And now we...
Bella has concluded. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.